This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
What does Colgate mean by live life to the brightest? Could it be a rich glass of red sipped inside a Parisian cafe on a snowy night when my gaze is met by a tall, mysterious... I mean, brushing is directed with Colgate Optic White Pro Series Toothpaste gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 3 days, so you can live life to the brightest and finish that glass without worrying about teeth stains. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Hello everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor 42 for Survivor Global. I'm your host, Shannon Gust, here to talk about the finale. The season is over. I don't know if you can hear me smiling through your earphones, but I've been smiling for the 2 days since I watched the finale. I love the season. I love Marianne as a winner. Like, what a joy. What a world that we live in where Marianne won Survivor, and in an incredible way, I thought, with an amazing finale performance. And I'm so excited to talk about it with my good friend, an Australian Survivor All-Star, a rap host for life, even if, you know, technically retired, but I think it counts forever. It is the great Nick Iadanza. Nick, thank you for being here.
Hi, Shannon. And I, too, am a Amazonian parrot with the intelligence of a toddler. So I think that someone who's good to come on and chat to you about this finale.
That is a compliment, of course. So, again, it's good for a bird. Yes. That's pretty amazing for a bird. Like, wow.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you. We always do the finales, and it's good to get here and chat about this awesome season. And I too love the fact that I live in a world where Marianne is a Survivor winner. So,
like, imagine telling yourself that from episode one. Not even in like a it's improbable way, because she was like always super likable and seemed smart. Like, from the little we knew about her from the first episode, it was just like imagine how great this season would be if Marianne won. And, like, every part of that is true. It was a great season. And I love so much that Marianne won. I realized something about myself that I was talking about this with Peter yesterday. Like, Oma losing and having that heartbreak, and then Marianne winning and having that happiness, that for me is, like, an ideal Survivor storytelling thing.
Yeah.
Because I want to be hurt. I don't know what this says about me. Like, I want to feel pain.
Yeah, you've said this before. Yeah. I feel like I remember you saying this. I don't know. No, I don't remember in what context, but I remember thinking at that time,
hopefully,
like,
Survivor.
I don't know if I agree with that, but, like, having sat with it, I do agree with it, yeah.
I mean, sometimes
it sucks, though, when there's only one person that you want to win and they're gone. So you just need a good enough cast to absorb it.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, for me, there are some things that are too painful. Like, with Suri, like, she should have got at least one. Like, I'm happy to do the pain on, like, one season, but she should have got the win. Like, that to me, I don't know that, like, betters the season. But even, like, Rob losing Amazon, like, it kind of gives us, like, cool grit to the season. Like, not everything you wanted to happen happened. And, like, you live with that pain. But, like, it's especially great. Like, for me, like, a good example is maybe, like, Philippines. Like, I really wanted Malcolm to win. He's, like, the reason I'm a super fan, that, like, Malcolm double season really, like, made me go back and watch and find rap and, like, become obsessed with Survivor even more than I was. But, like, the exquisite pain of Malcolm losing. And then Denise won, and I also love Denise. And I kind of feel like that, like, Oma and Marianne were my two favorites the entire season. So I had, like, the pain of Oma losing, and, like, you know, it's great when Survivor makes you feel extreme emotions, negative and positive. Well, not like anger, but, like, in a way that they're trying to make you feel bad, not that you just are angry about the things that they're doing. So I'm like sad about Omar, and then I'm like so happy about Marianne. And I feel like that's what you want to get out of Survivor season. That's my preference.
I feel like the early 2000s Australian reality TV version is watching Ricky Lee get voted out on Australian Idol, and then cheering when Casey Donovan won. I feel like that's kind of like that's what my mind goes to when I think of like, oh no, this person is gone. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, finally, it's okay.
Yeah, mine was Paulini into Guy Sebastian.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm still devastated about Paulini. I saw in The Bodyguard she was very good, and Guy, obviously, you know, an amazing singer, so, wow.
We're losing all the American listeners.
Yeah, 2003 to 2004, Australian Idol was a time for all American. I'm sure they knew they had American Idol. It was a cultural phenomenon. They're aware. Anyway, back on this, I want to ask you, Nick, firstly, a couple of things. Obviously, we're here with the podcast curse. If anyone missed it, curses always happen to us in the week leading up to and during when we podcast. So if we get through this podcast, the curse will be broken. It's cool. It's extreme podcasting. Unless something horrific has befallen you in the last few days that I'm unaware of. But I feel like at the moment we're okay.
At the moment we're okay. However,
oh God.
When we were doing the week to when we were like organizing this, it was the week that both our grandparents died. Now, does that count?
No, I don't.
Or is it just like even, is it even
that on the,
no, no, is it like even the various mention of it like sucks things into its orbit?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I would like to say that that's just like a separate issue. And what we have here is a positive day where the curse will be broken, only good things. And I know what broke the curse. Can I tell you?
Marianne.
It's Marianne.
Yeah.
Well, Marianne broke the curse. Now,
I hope so.
Now, last time we podcasted, I found out that my family had COVID whilst we were podcasting.
Yeah, it's not over.
So I have my phone here.
Oh God!
I have my phone here, and if I get a call, then you know we'll know that something is up. But
don't even.
For now, Marianne has saved us. She has closed the loop, and that is the world. Oh wait, I just got a message.
Don't.
It's from AK.
And he's okay. He's okay.
Okay. We're just talking about Big Brother. Okay. It's okay. It's okay, people. Okay. All right. Okay. Come on. Whew.
Yeah.
Like that.
This
right.
is like
back to it. Marianne.
Yeah, like when in Friends, when Phoebe always like whenever she goes to the dentist, someone dies, so she just calls everyone in her life to make sure they're alive. Like that's like me and this podcast. Like just like need to make sure I just want to know everyone in my life is okay, that I'm okay.
Yeah.
This is what you get just a few minutes into the global finale podcast. We're talking about old school Australian Idol. We're talking about how a podcast curse maybe killed both of our grandparents. And we're not talking that much about
just gave me a heart attack.
Yeah. So this is where we're at. As I said last week, like I've had a cursed month. And the podcast curse better chill because I can't. So that's where we're at. Nick, usually, or at least last season, you binged like right at the end, Survivor 41.
Yes.
But you were not doing that
yes.
this season. You were kind of keeping up. Were you keeping up weekly? Like what were you doing with the season?
Yes. So I was keeping up weekly. I think there was like maybe like 1 or 2 weeks where I watched like 2 episodes together. But like I was keeping up and I was really enjoying it. Like, and I know that, you know, we've spoken about how like I've like, tried to like step away a little bit and watch it more kind of like from like kind of just as part of my weekly rotation of things that I watch, time that I unwind, as opposed to like it being this kind of like full on juggernaut thing that I follow every intricacy of it. And I do feel like the new era of Survivor is designed to be digested in this way that is just like fun. And it is like, you know, it's this thing that kind of lifts you up. It's a quick burst of energy for us on a Thursday night. And I just feel like really good about my relationship with Survivor. I really feel really good about the Survivor that we're getting. It feels a very fresh compared to Australian Survivor. And I just feel like I have found the perfect balance with the season, with the show. And what better way to find that balance with such a good season?
Yeah.
Such a good season. Now, I probably lost track of my rankings, but it's definitely in the top third for me. So I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say, like, top 10 last week, because I was like, I need to look at my rankings, and that feels like a lot. There are so many good seasons. Obviously, just talking about US Survivor, because top 10 globally, like, I mean, there's, like, really no room there.
I'd really have
to look at those rankings. I did look at my US rankings, and I think it's top 10. Like, I think it fits right where I have, like, 33 and 37 as this, like, excellent new school season that we're going to be recommending to people. That's a newbie season that's just fun and fresh, and it just feels light and good, and it's just built on this amazing cast with some kind of silly twist, so we kind of get past that if we can and just rely on this incredible cast. And I'm going to say it, like, for me right now, I do have it probably around, 9 or 10.
I think that might be a little higher, but I do get what you're saying. I do see how it kind of fits in with the 33 and the 37. I don't think it comes. I think 33 is the best of that bunch, but it's definitely up there. I do think it's definitely up there. So I'm all in on that. Yeah, more of this, of this, please.
Well, let's review, because here are all the things that I loved about it. The editing I thought was super fun, really playful. Some things were missed, which we'll talk about, like the nullifier wasn't there. I think the biggest editing miss for me, you know, they didn't show, like, Draenor's relationship, but okay, like, you can't get all the dynamics, but they left out a scene, the secret scene where Romeo came out to the tribe. And it was a secret scene, it wasn't on the show. Even in the scene, he's talking about how impactful this will be to kind of have a platform for it, and it doesn't make the show. It wasn't a big episode. I mean, all the Merge episodes were big. So there wasn't, I guess, the time for it, but they should have made the time, because it ended up being such a big part of his story. He talks about it at the final tribal council and the after show. So I think that, to me, was a miss. So I'm sorry to start on a negative. Otherwise, some of these threads that were coming back, you know, like Romeo taking Marianne through after he's spoken about, like, empowering strong, independent women. There was little things, like, I was tweeting out, you know, Daniel had some really weird quote in episode 5 where he was like, I'm as much a fisherman as a fireman is an arsonist. And it cuts to Mike, cut to this episode, and Jeff's like, Mike, it's kind of ironic that you as a fireman are making fire. Like, little things like that. There's so many fun little editing moments. And Rob's fact checker says it's the most even confessional chart we've ever had, just in terms of everyone having the most even spread. We got to know these characters. We were invested in them. It's an incredible cast. I love the cast. I honestly think they pretty much all delivered top to bottom in some way to the story of the season. I think it had amazing moments. Like, I thought the pre-merge, really, really fun. Cast, enjoy hanging out with them. And the them almost going to rocks, like, that to me elevates it to a top-tier pre-merge, just on, like, that being, like, an iconic pre-merge moment. And then the merge, the Lydia vote, the double tribal council, which was super meaningful, and also the majority was breaking strategically. High going with Omer's life.
Well, I loved
great.
Lydia.
The Lydia vote with them, the merge vote was, like, that. I feel like from then, like, especially the season was on.
Yeah. So many great characters, just like that. That just, you know, Daniel as well. Like, Daniel was so good. I loved
Zach.
What he brought to the show. Like, Zach.
Yeah.
Zach was great. There was just,
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they really knocked it out of the park. Like, what? Like, I know that they're aiming for more diversity, which is brought in fresh faces, but have they shifted what they're looking for in terms of, like, what each individual character brings in the casting process? Like, there's got to be a different, I feel like they're moving further away from, like, you've got to be we need 6 bikini babes, boy and girl, and they're just going for, like, really interesting people. Like, there's got to be something, right?
I think a big thing is that it's all about the new era, but the new era pays so much reference to the old era. I mean, we saw that a lot in 41. Like, I've been watching since this time, and, you know, Nasir learnt English from Survivor. So it's not as much bikini babes that they pick up at a bar. It's more super fans. People who really love the show and want to deliver to it, maybe in more of a character way than just kind of being there for the TV exposure. And I think so that, like, super fan or fan element, I think really contributes to them casting better characters. So I think, I mean, the cast was amazing. And I think from, like, a season standpoint, it's going to be so fun on the rewatch to watch Marianne win in this way. I feel like the edit is totally there because she's been such a big and likable character. But it was only really last week where she emerged as, like, a winner contender. So that's such a fun winner edit where you're like, oh, I didn't see it. It wasn't telegraphed to me. But now that it's there, I get it and I like it. So that's so fun. And the season to end on the Drea vote, the Omer vote, and the finale, which I think were 3 of the best episodes. Like, it really, much like Marianne, came home so strong. So I just think it's such a fun season. And I think it is top 10. And another amazing thing, all the silly twists mercifully sidestepped. in a way from the Survivor gods. Like, it doesn't get better than this. So, yeah, no notes. No notes on this, pretty much, other than some of the scenes being left out. But, like, a brilliant job done by all.
Definitely. Yeah. I just, like, I love the, I'm sure we'll speak about, I love the jury speaking in the, in
so
the,
good.
So good.
Wow. Was that not so fun to get the jury speaks there? When we haven't had Ponderosa, so to get some of their perspective, and they always do jury speaks, and I used to watch these, like, minutes long videos of the whole jury that they would put, like, you know, as these extra scenes. And when that started coming up, and it's a fun editing, and, like, bam, 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 and, like, the way to frame that, whole scene, which can kind of sometimes be a little meh, like that pre-final tribal scene where the final three are just being like, I should win for this reason, and eating breakfast, kind of feels a little rote at this point. And they walked in, pumped it up, it highlighted again this amazing strategic cast were all really thinking about the game. It, like, laid the framework. Incredible. It's, like, such a good addition to the show.
Again, no notes.
Actually,
notes for Australian Survivor.
Yeah. Notes for all the franchises. I know LaRue's listening. Like, take that. Steal that one. It was amazing. All right. Well, let's talk about the actual finale, and we'll go through it kind of chronologically, because we'll start with the final five vote, because, again, all of it builds really from Marianne's move to what it's going to be chronologically. So what did you think about how Marianne played this? Because it's definitely between, okay, so do I want to make the big move of saving Lindsay? Because she still needs that jury credit. Somehow they're not hugely crediting her for the incredible move last week where Omer even said, did you do this? Like, gives her that individual credit. She still comes back and the jury and the players don't seem to be like, Marianne did that. I think Jonathan still doesn't think, you know, Marianne did that and he watched on TV. So she wants to, like, make that big jury move, but then she also would be doing it to save a phenomenal jury contender in Lindsay. So what did you think about her move here?
Well, it just depends on, like, what the vibe was from other people around Lindsay. Like, clearly, like, they thought that she had a really good story and had really good relationships with the jury. And I can see that Marianne was threatened by that. And I would be too. Like, she saved herself in all those ways with the do or die and the immunities. And so I feel like it was a good representation of that head versus heart thing. And really, I think she came out with the right decision. But I really wanted that TV moment, right? Like, I really wanted that moment of her getting the idol and then playing the idol. Oh, that was the next tribal council.
No, yeah. So at this tribal council, at the final five, Mike would have played it on her, and then she would have played it. I was screaming at the TV to play it because you wanted to have that big moment where Mike just looked silly. But then. We had that. We just had to wait 2 days to get it, an hour in the time of the show. Because I feel like that was the great compromise.
Yes, and I was like, no, Marianne,
yes,
like,
same.
What are you doing? Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, more fool me. The thing is that, like, it's very risky, though, because if you don't get through the next round, then all that will, you know, that, like, and you're voted out and, like, but if she plays that, does she now become public enemy number one? Like, she saw and was part of what happened to Omer, which is, you know, you become a bright spark, you get voted out. So did she not want to become too much of a bright spark so that she can then squeak through the final four, knowing that she probably isn't going to beat a Jonathan or whatever, thinking perhaps that she's not going to beat them in a fire making? So I think it was a risky decision. I think that the reality TV show watching person in me, if I was out there, would have been chomping at the bit to have that big moment. And I think that having that big moment would have blinded me to the fact that it was actually probably not the best move. And therein lies why I have impulse control on Survivor. Yeah. So I think that Marianne played it beautifully.
I totally agree. I was yelling, like, play it. Like, I wanted her to have that moment. And you're right. It's risky just from, like, a game, not like, it's riskier from a game perspective to play it because then you do hide in your threat level and you might be sent to fire more than being taken through rather than having the big moment at final tribal council where there's nothing they can do about it, like they can't vote you out. So I was yelling, she definitely had more patience than me. But the risk is, like, again, like, yeah, she gets voted out at fire. She loses fire. And then she never even got to have the moment, which at that point she would have lost. Like, there's probably bigger problems, but, like, how sad would that be? But I loved the move of having the patience to know that she could have the moment if she was going to have a winning game to do it at final tribal council. And I also think what's getting lost here is that Marianne is a swing vote in every scenario. She's aligned with every person She's not being looked at even as a threat. People playing idols on her. I mean, all of this is very impressive. But that means that it's very hard for her to save Lindsay because she's kind of working in the swing vote position with Romeo. Romeo wants to vote out Lindsay. He's kind of leaning that way. We see the discussion. But I kind of feel like they would do it together. So here are your choices. You're either voting with Romeo against Jonathan with Lindsay, in which case you can't even save her with your idol. Like, you're too powerful. You know, you're not going to, like, have the votes again. She can actually just vote out Jonathan. So who are you saving with your idol? Or you leave Romeo out of it when he seems very willing to work with you to have the big moment. Oh, I negated three votes, like a vote you possibly could have had with you. And then Romeo takes her through next time on that social connection. So you've alienated Romeo. You've had that, like, anti-social move with Romeo just so you can have the idol play. Again, trinkets can be very anti-social, as we see. And you've raised your threat level. So that's a hard one for me when she knows that if she's going to lose
Mike's
to a winning game.
And Mike's going to be super pissed.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you want people to bring you through, and she's relying, she said, on Mike taking her through, we'll talk about whether that would have happened, Mike's not going to want to do that. So she's relying on people wanting to take her through at the Final Four. And if she makes this big move from a threat perspective and from a social perspective, she would be severing a lot of that, where she can do it at the Final Tribal Council, and she still makes Mike look silly, which is the intention, obviously, like, oh, he played his idol on me, but I'm doing this. She still makes him look silly at the Final Tribal Council sitting next to him. She lessens him by playing it then, but there's just nothing Mike can do about it, like sending her to fire in the next round. So from a timing perspective, she had a lot more patience than I think either you or I would have.
Definitely. Definitely. And I just think that what she showed is that she had way more going on below the surface than people were giving her credit for the whole season. She was always like goofy Marianne, like saying something silly, really loud laugh, you know. But like, just because people behave that way does not mean that they're not thinking. Like, I see it every day as a teacher. Just because someone's the class clown doesn't mean that they're not going to pull out the best grade in the exam. Like, and I think that it was really refreshing to see her kind of like rip off the kind of costume and be like, haha, like, look what I was also thinking. So brilliant move.
Yeah, and I think a big part of Marianne's game is how intentional that perception was. And we're going to talk about her game through this podcast, but the biggest thing I love about her game, and I say it all the time, I say it with Alexandra, for example, I said it with Erica last year, it's the awareness and it's the self-awareness. And we're going to talk about that as like the key difference between her and Mike. To know your own perception and to be able to shift it. It takes extreme knowledge to then kind of sculpt how you're perceived by others and be able to articulate that, which she does. So she said in the exit with Rob, she said, there are two ways to play Survivor. You're either kind of laying low, but then you have to really build at the end and try and get the votes, which are harder because you've been laying low or kind of changing the way people see you. Or you're a threat from the get-go, but then it's harder to get to the end. If you get to the end, you'll win. But it's really hard to get to the end, as a lot of the threats through the merge saw. She chose the first pass. She actively chose it, and she worked on that perception, and then she articulated it with, I think, some really killer examples of why she was such a good player. So it's very intentional, and I think a lot of these like savvy moves in the end game and through the merge, some of the subtle moves, you know, like the rice and giving up her spot for the rice, like these subtle social positioning moves really show how much was going on in that active positioning and work and perception the whole time. And I think this was a great move, a great decision. Lindsay cannot be left in the game. I think the way the jury was looking at it and the way that Marianne still wasn't getting a lot of credit, like I thought that she shot up to number one jury contender last week. It seems she shot up. She definitely didn't beat Lindsay, and she was still kind of struggling against Mike. So if you let Lindsay go to four and let her get the double chance, if she gets to the end, she's winning. To the point where I think if Lindsay wins this challenge at the final five, the puzzle, you actually can't even take out Jonathan. Like, you have to take out Romeo, because in theory, Romeo's going to win the challenge. In theory, you need to weaponize someone like Jonathan to beat Lindsay at a challenge or at fire. Like, that's how dangerous Lindsay is to you. That I was thinking about this all week in terms of, like, Jonathan versus Romeo, because we kind of glossed over it last week. We were like, Lindsay versus Jonathan, that's going to be it. Like, that's intuitive. And that is how it played out. People weren't looking at Romeo. But all week I was thinking, Romeo is taking up space Marianne may want. And theoretically, I do believe that was true, even though he wins the challenge. And Jonathan would need to be weaponized if Lindsay wins to try and take her out at four. That's not what happens. Obviously she loses, but then Romeo wins the challenge. But I really do think that there's a lot of important stuff in taking out Lindsay at either five or four, because she cannot get to the final three. And while you do have this big move to save her, it is a big actively wrong move. So if you're fighting with her for credit later, if you're sitting next to her, she could argue for that social credit, even though she didn't know about the idol, because she's the only one who benefits from it.
So I've got a question. So what I was thinking was going to happen was Mike was going to play his idol on her. And then she stands up and plays her idol on Lindsay, right? Like, that's kind of, I felt like what the show was expecting us, what wanting us to want, yes? What are the rules? I should probably be better placed to answer this than you.
What are the rules, non-playing person versus me, two-time Survivor player? I don't know. Let's find out.
So he says, I'm playing my idol on Marianne, right? Thank you. Oh, the best. Takes the idol. Yep, cool. Then she sits down. He says, all right, we're going to play the votes. And she goes, Jeff, I'm going to play my idol on Lindsay. Can Mike at that point say, well, damn, okay, I changed my mind and I'll play it on X or on
definitely
whoever.
Not. No.
So, well, but there's nothing in the rules that say that, like, when your vote, when your decision to play it on someone is locked in. And I know that it would just be this kind of like endless moving around, but there is no official anything in the Australian Survivor rules, at least, that say there is like a moment like that your choice is valid until, like, it really just says until the votes are read, before the votes are read. So theoretically, before the votes are read, you can keep shuffling around who you're playing it on until you let the Jeff start speaking.
Yeah, I mean, they should probably put that in the rules, because I feel like it's pretty intuitive that, like, once, because he says, like, who are you going to play it on? And then Tony kind of innovated around trying to read the jury, and that's something people do. And then once you say it, I feel like that is locked in. Although Sean was going back and forth with it, but I feel like at a point it's like cards down, you know?
So this is why I think that the, okay, here's what I reckon. That there should be like, in the each idol, there's like one of those little like ink pouches. Like, you know, if you try and rip a tag off an item of clothing from like Target or something, so that they know that you've stolen it, that like you have to pull that ink pouch and like smear it on someone and be like, you now have protection. And then once that ink is busted, that pouch is busted, then that's it. You can't change your mind.
I mean, I don't think that the show is worrying about this because I don't think it's a legitimate concern, but now maybe someone will listen to this podcast and try and exploit that loophole in the rules. So maybe they should worry about it. Maybe that's how we'll innovate the next few seasons of Survivor, is that someone will be like, wait, it's not in the rules, and they'll have to bring it out, and it'll be the whole transferable thing again, and it'll be like, well, no. Great.
Yes. Well, okay, save this audio, because if Survivor goes for another 42 seasons, there is no doubt that that will eventually happen.
I think they'll say it's not allowed, but then the person will pull out the rule book, and then it'll become this whole, like, which we saw in Survivor South Africa, we'll be talking about the rules, it'll be more like a trial. Why are you putting this out into the universe? That's not good TV. Like, that, is that fun?
Well, alternatively, like, behind Jeff, there should be, like, a poster with everyone's, like, headshot on it, and you have to, like, clip the idol to someone's face, like, pin the tail of the donkey, and, like, once you've pinned it, that's it. And if you take your hand off it, then you're done.
We're just trying to get party games into Tribal Council. That's what it sounds like. What you do is we should put the music on and we should all walk around the stumps, and then whoever's out, that's how we play the game. That's what the Survivor is now. Are you planning a birthday party for one of your children? Because I think some of your thoughts are maybe running into each other.
All right, so I guess we'll scrap the bobbing for advantages chat that I had planned next. Okay.
You're like, look, I'm a dad of two kids, and I've come in with a bunch of great ideas for Survivor, and they're all just like parenting hacks for the show. It's meant to be fun for kids. It actually works, doesn't it?
Pass the parcel or add trouble.
Yeah, no, genuinely, okay. It works. Sorry. For what, like, I was going to say in slow motion when Mike and Marianne, this is the best part of the episode, Mike and Marianne lose in slow motion, and Jeff's like, what? The game hadn't even started. A small child could have done this. Like, what were you thinking? Like, so yeah, maybe like Jeff, yeah, should treat them like kids at a birthday party.
Okay. Anyway, I cannot wait in 5 years when someone unearths this audio and proves me correct. Until then, carry on.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you gave me this, like, supernatural segue. I don't know if anyone saw on Twitter, but Omar said that the Lydia move was largely in part to me and Dr. Amanda Rabinowitz, so I'm very excited for the deep dive, because it seems Yeah. Well,
what do you say? Give me just the cliff notes.
Well, me and Dr. Amanda Rabinowitz did a podcast in the Game Theory series around psychological manipulation, persuasion tactics, and Omar will talk about it in his deep dive, but from what I understand from him and the correspondence that we've had, is that a big part of how he got Lydia out, and he'll explain the whole thing, but was based on what I called the jet ski principle. So like you go to your parents and you say, can I have a jet ski? And they're like, what? No. And you're like, oh, that's fine. I just want a bicycle. And they're like, all right. So I don't know. He like used that to, I think, convince Hai to take out Lydia. So it was pretty cool that the podcast could like, and he said he told me that he like mentioned it in confessional, but they didn't air it obviously, but it's pretty cool that it like actively influenced strategy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Although I did try the jet ski thing, like last week when I was getting on my flight, I went to the person at the gate. I'm like, oh, do you have any spare business class seats? And he's like, no. And I'm like, okay, well, can I just get like a free seat next to me in economy? He's like, also no. I'm like, well, that didn't work. So maybe it's not such a good answer. I just like sat crammed into my economy seat, just around other people. So. Yeah.
Oh, that's the best.
Yeah. I tried so hard and I was like crying and I think he felt bad, but there were literally no seats. So I wasn't crying because I didn't get a seat. South Africa was a tough trip. But anyway, the jet ski principle worked better for Omen than for me is what I'm trying to say.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Can I just ask one more question before we move on from this tribal?
Mm-hmm.
And that is there any merit in, I know that, you know, without knowing what we know about the final tribal, is there any merit in her not playing the idol on Lindsay, but playing the idol on, like, say, Jonathan? So, like, just so that, like, you just further demonstrate to the jury that, like, hey, I am more aware of what's going on. He's my lapdog. Like, I brought him because I've won. And you can say, I'm trying to bring him to the end because I know I want to beat him, and like show this person that like thought he was in charge is actually like, I'm in charge. Is there any merit to that?
Well, Jonathan's going to lose to her anyway. And I think it's just about, again, like raising that threat level and severing that connection for Mike to come back. She's really relying. So this is what she thought when she outlines it at the final tribal council. She says these moves set her up that she was always going to be taken through to the final four. I don't really agree with what we said, what was said in exits, but she thinks that Jonathan is going to put himself to fire against Mike. So then she and Romeo go straight through. So she's not going to have to make fire. Obviously, she wins immunity. She's through. Romeo wins immunity. He takes her, as we see. And Mike, she said, was going to take her just based on like his word and how he played the idol on her, which, you know, his word is not great. So in exits, Mike said he would have put himself and Marianne through to fire to beat her. And Jonathan was like, ah, oh, it was fluid. I might have gone against Mike, but I might have put Mike against Marianne. So I don't think she was as safe as she thought. But I do think she's kind of trying to rely on, again, a reduced threat level and those social connections. So to kind of laugh in Mike's face when he still has the power to win immunity and put you to fire, that doesn't seem like the right time to point and laugh. Like, you want to do it at the final tribal council where you're like, ah, oh, you thought. And she's still lessening Mike, who is, I think, the main person you want to reduce. Jonathan, I think, is drawing dead anyway. And she's doing it at
a time.
You
can reduce him anyway later
that.
On.
Yeah. Like, I don't think you need to reduce Jonathan.
That makes sense. So, I agree that Mike would have put himself and Marianne in there.
That's what he said. So,
I agree with that. Yeah, I think he would have done.
There's some interesting stuff there. Like, he seemed to back the fire to the point where in the next round, he and Jonathan were really wanting to go to fire. He's trying to like get Jonathan to opt out of fire. Like, it does seem like they wanted to prove something, and it was this whole like macho manly thing.
Yeah.
And they're both like, ah, we're the two threats. We're going to take each other out. Like, come, like Marianne comes over the top and wins. But it does feel like they were kind of keen to go to fire. I want to say before we move on from this round, Lindsay But as we farewell Lindsay, I don't want to harp too much on it, because I went on and on about the amulet last week and not playing the amulet and how it will haunt me for the rest of my days, and we probably need Kieran here to work out me still talking about it. But knowing how the jury saw her compared to the final four, and that shot was hers, if she's against, I think, any of the final four, not Omar, I strongly feel that if she plays the amulet on Omar last week, one of the two of them almost definitely wins. Because the main thing for her, and Mike Bloom was talking to Rob in the feedback show about, like, well, she and Omar are still really on the back foot, everyone's voting against them, but the main thing is that she has the shield in Omar, and one of them has to make it to the final four, and either of them will be any of the other four players.
Yeah.
So at the final five, if Omar loses immunity, he's out. But that saves Lindsay for the round of final five. It's a shield for her. And then she has a double chance at four, and if she gets it, she's winning. And she's obviously a challenge beast. So I think that would be great for her, even better than her plan to go to the end with Omar, because I do think Omar would have won. There were some questions with the final five, and all four who weren't Lindsay said Omar was the best player of the season. Like, I think he's got the jury vote. So I think he beats her, and that was her intention, so that's not great. But unintentionally losing him here as a shield because everyone's come against them is the best pathway for her. So if she played it on him and he loses the puzzle, which is a big if, I really feel like she almost definitely wins the game. And I think if he wins the puzzle and can get to the double chance at four and win, then he's definitely going to win the game against anyone else, and Lindsay's going to go at five. So between the two of them, I really, really, really think they would have been separated at that final five, and the other one of them would have had such a good shot to win just getting through that final four and then having like an auto win with the jury. So hard for me to reconcile how close they were. It's one decision. Like, that's what's so hard about Survivor.
Yeah, and that one puzzle piece will haunt her also for the rest of it. So it's like, you know, if she's haunted by the amulet, she's going to be haunted even more by that one puzzle piece, because she did it without the need for the amulet. So I just think that someone like Lindsay is a character type that I'll always bet on. She's always going to do well. Mm. And it's just a shame it's not a shame, because I wanted Marianne to win. So, you know, I think that she did really well, and she proved that she was a really great force in the game. I don't expect that we'll ever see her again. But I think that she was excellent.
She's 100% my winner pick if this was Australian Survivor, because that's always the person that I pick my winner pick. And honestly, she probably wins Australian Survivor, right? Like, 100%. Yeah, like, she in a different universe where she's Australian, she's an Australian Survivor winner. Like, she's got all the skills, super strong, definitely winning those final challenges, super social, which you need in Australian Survivor. She'd do extremely well, I think, in Australian Survivor. And she did very, very well in the season. Like, to the point where I felt like she was making almost no wrong decisions. And then just, like, you can pinpoint it to just a few decisions that, or, like, things that were catching up to her. I mean, first Do or Die, like, that was the first thing where I was like, okay, well, that was wrong, but you made it through. But then after that with the amulet decision, it really is just that one back and forth that could mean win or loss. And then Omar talked about it in Exits about the Nullifier. Now that that's been fleshed out in Exits by Jonathan and Mike, I feel like I really understand kind of how the Nullifier was the decider. Have you listened to anything about the Nullifier, Nick?
Very, very, like, only a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, so Omar had a Nullifier that he found with Jonathan, and a big part of why he went home was that, as has been explained this week, was that he told Lindsay about the Nullifier. Jonathan could sense that from strategic stuff that Jonathan that was left on the cutting room floor. Jonathan then didn't trust them, and he went and told Mike, which was true. He, like, read this and told it to Mike, which was true. Hey, they want to give you your idol back with the Drea vote because they want to nullify you at five, which was accurate. So when Mike is saying, Omar doesn't want to go to the end with me, that's how he knows that. So that's a really interesting thing, because that showed how close Omar and Lindsay were. That was one of the reasons that was known. That showed that they want to go against Mike. So, like, Omar really lost that, like, social investment that he put in with Mike, made Mike want to come against Omar. So there was a lot of stuff that I think it was hard for Omar to kind of read, that Mike was turning against him, because it really happened right before that Drea Tribal Council. So it was like right
before. It is weird that they didn't include that.
Yeah, it's so pivotal that, like, Mike and Omar and Jonathan are all talking about how that was like the key break. And it's really, even in this episode when, like, Lindsay is, I feel like, hardcore throwing Omar under the bus about how, like, Omar was coming for Mike and it really wasn't her. All of that is based around the fact that, like, Omar wanted to nullify Mike, and she's saying, like, oh, it wasn't me, and one of the reasons she didn't want to play the amulet on Omar was because she was really trying to distance herself, not just from Omar, but from, like, that whole kind of idea that might be something that Omar wants to do, although I feel like that means she maybe should have protected him a little bit more, but instead she wants to distance herself. So So that was a really big thing that caused this massive break. And yeah, is like alluded to in parts of the edit when like betrayal is talked about in broader terms, but it's on this like specific thing. I don't know if they thought that was like too complex a story to tell, but it is strange that they left out a whole advantage that was like key to a massive, massive strategic and social breakdown with like most of the final six.
Yeah.
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 So yeah, I mean, Amulet's decision aside, Lindsay was great. Very empathetic, very much like leading with the social game, which I always enjoy. And I think in a different world, with a few key decisions going a different way, there's a survivor win possibly coming out there. If it's a different final five with Oma being in it and then losing at the final five. But let's talk about this final four where Romeo wins. Everyone else, as we know, is a giant baby who lost its emotion. How dare they? And he chooses Marianne. So this is like a big, you know, place for Romeo to really kind of show his well, I guess strategic agency, although hard spot for Romeo. What did you think about the choice to take Marianne through?
I thought that it was the best decision for him because about beating Mike. But I was also considering that is it better to bring Jonathan because you don't want bring John to the final three because if Mike wins, at least that's one less person who's going to vote for him. Does that make sense? Like, because you know that Mike and Jonathan are going to vote for each other.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
So you don't want to send one home at four. You want them almost both. If Mike's going to be next to you, you want Jonathan next to you. But mm-hmm. I guess the ultimate goal is to get Mike out. So I was kind of thinking that if I was Romeo, I would have thought that Marianne would get a bit of traction, like because she seemed likable and like she had made some good decisions. And so I would have thought that Mike is going to win anyway. Why not take away one of his jury votes? And if I'm Romeo, I think I can beat Jonathan, but I don't think I can beat Marianne and Mike. So at least I come second?
Yeah. He has said he wanted to come second. That's how he was looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess he was playing to win, which is what you should always do. But Mike, I thought, just would have beaten them all. But I guess, you know, I guess that wasn't true either. So I think he did a good job. I liked Mike trying to get inside Jonathan's head about don't volunteer for fire. But even though Jonathan said he could see through it, but I did like Mike trying. I guess my whole thought on everything in this finale was I came into the finale thinking that Mike was the far and away winner because of the edit.
Right.
I just felt like from very early on, I'm thinking like episodes like two or three onwards, I was like, the show is setting us up to want Mike to win and that Mike is actually going to win. I thought it wasn't like a fallen angel thing. I thought it was like, he's out far and away the one that they are setting up to be the winner. And even when Lydia, who was my preseason winner pick, was voted out, I shifted to Mike.
That's not a thing. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, I know. As in like who was my kind of like, you doesn't know, care. Brooding.
Mm-hmm.
Basing it all on that, if that's the perception that I have, I would assume that that's the perception that they have. So I think he made the right decision putting Jonathan up, trying to get Mike out.
That's funny because so when my winner pick, Oma, went out, I shifted last week to Marianne, thinking that Marianne would win.
Oh, you can't shift. You can't.
That's insane. There was one episode left. That doesn't count at all. No, but I feel like I came in to this episode really thinking Marianne was the front runner more than she even was. I thought Marianne would be Lindsay coming into this episode, like from a jury perspective, like really? I really thought like this incredible, like Lisa Stanger, Natalie Anderson-esque move elevates her above anything. Oma literally said, did you do it? And she used her extra vote. It was so individual. And we'll talk about how Jonathan and Mike still don't seem to see that, especially Jonathan. But I thought like this catapulted her in a way that you would think maybe could be even kind of concerning for a threat level, but she had an idol and then like Jonathan and Lindsay like really were taking the attention. So I thought that if she hadn't had an idol, maybe she would have been maybe in a little bit of trouble, but people still weren't looking at her. So I came in thinking like Marianne is definitely going to win. So from my perspective, I think what really separated Mike and Marianne for me in the season was podcasting about it every week in depth. and kind of passing out both of their games. Because Marianne, every week I was like, I like where Marianne is sitting, like, through the merge. I'm like, I like her positioning. Like, why aren't they targeting Marianne? Like, she has an idol. No one's talking about it. And I would, like, give her chizzy points for sitting on the idol or, like, getting implicit immunity or why isn't anyone talking about her or, like, kind of being part of it and people don't know. Whereas with Mike, one week on the podcast, I had a live chizzy where I was meant to give a point to Mike and in the middle of the podcast, I was like, I'm actually switching it to Marianne because we talk about it every week. And Kieran and I spoke about it last week where we were like, the jury is not going to like that Mike's going to come in and be like, honor and integrity. And does Mike know that's not his game? Because if he does it, he can't pitch accurately what he's doing and the way that he's playing. And if he does know, he's a different player to what I think, but I don't think he knows. So in working that out, and also I think for me, I early on also saw Mike as a massive front runner, but through even parts of the edit and like stuff with like him being led with Omar's lie, like I know that happened, but man, like the edit went out of their way to be like, he really was the puppet. He really got led here. And then he comes back and he's like, I made the high move. Things that like, I don't know that a US Survivor edit, definitely South Africa, but would a US Survivor winner edit go out of their way to show how wrong Mike was in places like that? And he also was wrong, and that contributes to his game, which makes it a harder game to pitch at Final Tribal Council. So I thought from an edit and a game and what would be a Final Tribal Council like perspective, I saw Marianne as over Mike this whole time. So that's interesting because I think that definitely contributes to me looking at Romeo's decision here.
Right. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess you're right about the making the wrong decision. Yeah.
Yeah, so I feel
the,
like...
The airing of him.
Maybe. Yeah, yeah. So I think for Romeo, I was thinking he should take Mike. Because I was like, but I think this is really hard for him to know. But everything I know in terms of like the edit and the way that I'm viewing Mike, possibly from a Final Tribal Council perspective, I'm thinking Romeo's best chance is... Well, if Jonathan beats Marianne at the end, he's taken Mike through, Mike doesn't get a big fire moment. Jonathan, he's going to beat... Maybe Marianne votes for him, maybe Tori votes for him. Mike and Jonathan, as we've said, can't vote for each other. Jonathan's not getting votes, and like maybe Mike comes in and just pitches what the jury don't want, and maybe he has a chance. That's how I was thinking it. But A, I don't really think he would have. I still think Mike would win that, even if the jury are not loving what Mike's doing in Final Tribal Council. I think that at that point, this game wouldn't be won on Final Tribal Council, so it wouldn't matter as much what he says because they just come in and be like, "It like we have nothing else other than Mike." So he'd really like have to really, really lose it. Like,
yeah,
great, but it would have to be somehow even worse to lose to like Romeo and Jonathan. So I don't think that he had really a chance. And I also think I'm looking at it from my perspective with the edit, with the way that I'm reading it. You're reading it differently. Other viewers are reading it differently. And the jury are undecided, as we hear in Jury Speaks. Like, they are undecided between Marianne and Mike. So Romeo can't read what isn't even true yet. Like, at that point, like, they're actively even. Yeah. So we can't be like, well, Mike's going to be less when things that haven't happened happen in the next couple of days. Like, it's hard for him to read something that at that point isn't, like, an active disparity. And even if it is, he has a very tough road anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
But here's the kicker. He took Marianne, he said in exits, 80% emotionally because he knew he couldn't win and he wanted her to win. So I buy this and I love
this. I 100% buy that.
Yeah.
I buy that so much because I, as someone who's been out there, sometimes like you can read the writing on the wall, like, you know, like I could read the writing on the wall of, you know, my last days on All Stars. I was like, I'm just not going to get to the next bit. There is too many people here that are like too much against me and I'm one person, right? So those things are writing on the wall. And then you start thinking, okay, well, if I'm going to go, what can I do to set up the fact that these three or four people who I do not want to win will at least have a chance to beat them, you know, like, and that almost becomes your priority when the writing is so on the wall. So I buy that 100% and that makes me like Romeo so much.
Yeah.
I'll let you try and figure out who those tribe members are that I was talking about, but I don't think you need to read too far into
it. Oh my God. Who does Nick not like? You really don't wear your heart on your sleeve in terms of that. Like keep the cards close to the vest. I think that for Romeo, he's a smart guy. It felt pretty clear that there wasn't, you know, at the point where the jury are like, what I like about Romeo's game is that he was a goat cockroach, a hybrid goat cockroach, a cockroach. God. That's what he was. And if he can explain that that was intentional, maybe he'll get my vote. When like Marianne's also been an underdog with like a better game and like, oh, he's the intentional cockroach. Like that's what we're I'm so sorry for saying cockroach three times.
No, no, say goat hashtag roach. Goat roach is way better.
I'm pretty sure it's cockroach, Nick.
No, the cockroach sounds so
funny. It sounds terrible.
Gross.
We'll have to ask Omar. Like, he's the one who's handing out, you know, animals to people.
Cockroach or goat roach?
Yeah, let
goat
us know in the comments. Let us know in the comments what's better.
goat roach is the superior option.
Oh, it's definitely more palatable for sure. But at this point, God, imagine like what that animal hybrid would be. It's fucking terrifying. Oh my God, I swore on the podcast. That's the curse. That's so terrifying. All right, sorry everyone.
The curse is that we just brought into existence a goat roach, like a cock goat. Like, I'm just imagining.
I can't believe you're taking cock goat from me. And you keep trying to make a goat roach. Like, stop trying to make it. It's not going to happen. Anyway.
I'm imagining a cock goat, this like giant thing with like this giant willy with like horns and a little beard, but like lots of scaly legs and antennas. That's what I'm imagining.
That's why I swore, because I was imagining. 4 years. Over 4 years of podcasting, never once swore. And then the cock goat, that's what got me here. We have deviated. My point is that Romeo's chances were slim. The point is that it was a tough road for Romeo, and based on what we are saying, anyway.
Yeah,
in all seriousness, he had the edit about how he wants to empower strong, independent women. He's smart enough to know this isn't happening for him, and we've said this so recently. We talked about it with Chrissy on Australian Survivor. I said, wow, if only Chrissy knew she was drawing dead, she could have taken her friend Josh. She kind of made him lose $500,000 for no reason. We talk about it with Ken and Adam. He could have had taken David. Yes, he was going to lose anyway. We've spoken about it with Baden. Wanted to take Harry, took Pia. If you're going to lose, take your friend. Take your friend so they can have $1 million or $500,000. And Romeo has the self-awareness to do that. And I love that so much. I do think it's a shame that he couldn't do it for Omar last week when he's voting out Omar and Omar really invested in him. But he said that he really like realized it at the final four when they were laying out all the games. He's like, yeah, I have no shot. He took Marianne. And like, how great for Marianne from her social game for that investment that she's really given him. The people on the bottom, she's worked on it. And she's, you know, rewarded for that. And Romeo has a self-awareness. Like, I really, really love this. This is my favorite move that Romeo has made since the pre-merge.
That is a great example, the Baden, Harry, Pierre of it all. That is an excellent, excellent comparison.
There's so many times when someone who cannot win against either person wins that challenge and is like, I might have a slightly better chance against this person. It's like, yeah, but you're still not winning. Like, there are ways that people can win at Final Tribal Council, but there are some people who, like, it's done before the Final Tribal Council, and that's probably true more times than not. And you always think, damn, that's a shame that you didn't take your friend. Like, you really just made them lose money for no reason, and you had no shot. Like, you were no longer a player in the game. Like, you were a decider. You were kind of like a juror, but different. Like, you got to decide who wins, and you didn't choose your friend because you still misjudged where you sat in the game. And Romeo didn't. And I think, honestly, like, applause to, like, also to win the challenge. I thought, like, great moment for Romeo. And then to do that really works with this story of empowering women, and just very, very cool to do that for a friend and to know your place in the game at that point to do it.
But and there were plenty of comparisons in my mind between the end of season one of Australian Survivor. Chrissy did the opposite and took her friend and got rid of the biggest threat, and she won. So it's kind of like the opposite. So
yeah,
but I'm sure we'll get into that later.
Yeah, I think it's probably hard to read out there, and you would hate for the one time someone was like, oh, I had no chance, so I took my friend, and then like maybe they did have a small chance. Like, maybe the jury thought differently about the person that they take out of the game than they thought, and maybe he would have had a shot against Mike. But I do think that like some reads are just that definite, and I don't think anyone's saying like, yeah, Romeo was sitting next to Jonathan and Mike performed that way, Romeo really has a shot. Like, I think it's really hard to read that you're drawing that dead. Like, I think that there's drawing dead, and then there's drawing, like, you know, cock goat dead. And I think that Romeo knew that.
Okay, let's...
No, okay, I'm just saying that, like...
Let's not go back. It was done for Romeo.
Like, he knew that. And that's a hard thing to realize about yourself when you've put investment into this game. And, like, that's great self-awareness. And, like, some people maybe have a shot. You know, Lee had holes in his game that Chrissy tore apart, and maybe that wouldn't have been, you know, she backed herself on that and she had the right read on that. I just don't think that world existed for Romeo, and I think that he did the best that he could with that situation where there's, like, really nothing to be gained. The decisions, as we're saying, are marginal. You're like, take, you know, I'm saying take Mai through. You're saying maybe take Marianne through, have Jonathan. But we're all disagreeing on it because it's so marginal. There's very little to be gained. Like, he might as well just give it to his friend anyway. And I think that that was a fine decision.
So what did you think of the, that was a pretty good fire-making challenge, I thought. That I kind of, I know you hate the final four fire-making. So have you gotten
every,
used
every
to
week,
it?
Every week, every season, Nick. Every time. Go, do you like fire yet? No.
I know, but like, I'm not saying do you like it, but like, are you, have you grown to recognize that there is more to it than we initially thought? No?
I mean, no. I think other fire-making challenges for me have been a little bit more exciting, maybe. Maybe because I thought that once Marianne was taken through, I felt like Marianne had won. So I felt like that was the interesting thing. I felt like it wasn't deciding, like, Tony and Sarah between, like, maybe who would win this season. I felt like Marianne had it once she'd been taken through. I thought that was the incredible thing. And then, like, also Jonathan and Mike made fire for me.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it's an interesting one. I think that what I was trying to say on Australian Survivor a few weeks ago was, like, if the jury feel actively negatively about everyone, even if that's at different levels of negative, like Smash and Nicole kind of come to mind for me, where there's, like, a lot of, like, kind of negative feelings about the game, then any one of those people can build that up to, like, the point where even if you were behind coming into Final Tribal Council, you can then make that up in Final Tribal Council. But if the jury come in feeling quite positively about people, it's hard to break that down if you're someone they were feeling negative about. So, like, while Mike definitely lost some favor, I still think that Romeo is coming in against Mike where they feel much more positively, like, actively positively about what Mike was doing in the game, or Marianne. So I don't see how he can win against either of those people. Like, there's not enough there for him to gain it in a Final Tribal Council.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk about that Final Tribal Council, which I thought was covered pretty well for the new format. Everyone got their say of the jurors. I thought it was good with, like, some of these, like, smaller juries worked way better for the new format. And I felt like it was like a hard, like, especially for Romeo, some of it, like, with High, which we'll talk about. But I like the moments of softness, especially, like, Dre of all people, like, kind of calming everyone down about, like, Mike and saying that he played a good game. So I thought that it kind of spoke to the cast and that they play hard. It was definitely, like, it was quite harsh, and it was definitely, like, some strong jury questioning, but I don't feel like it ever got personal.
Can I talk about the comparison that I saw a lot of people making online?
Yes, let's talk about it.
Yeah, which is what I had kind of alluded to before, and I was thinking about it while I was watching, but I you know, you never know whether it's just because, you know, you just relate things back to your own experiences. But it was interesting to see so many people message me and so many people, like, commenting, saying that it did remind of Christy and Lee. And the comparisons are definitely there. We've got a young, I'd say quirky young girl who on the surface it seems like is perhaps not thinking about the game in one way, but actually is. And on the other hand, you have an older, very affable, funny,
more clearly dominant man
who's clearly dominant. It's this kind of, has like a father-daughter element to it as well.
I feel like Lee was, what, like 7 years older than Christy. He wasn't, like, maybe, how old is Lee?
That's how he used to kind of, we used to talk about them, like, and he used to say it as well, especially because he had kids and Christy was like the youngest person on the cast. So I definitely see the comparisons, but the biggest comparison is the idea that, while I think that Mike was ultimately way more strategic than Lee, it was this over-reliance on this idea of his word and this idea of, like, it's my word, I've got to do this, that it kind of just cooked his goose. And that's the phrase that I always use with Lee, that it's just like he just couldn't pick up that people didn't like that and that people didn't want that and people weren't going to value it the way that he perhaps valued it. And, you know, the Lee of All Stars recognized that and played accordingly. But the difference is, I think that Mike actually didn't rely on his word as much. Even like it, up to the point where he was like, it was only that one time. Like there were times where he was like really strategic and really thinking and always trying to position himself in a really like positive way. Whereas I think that Lee was just kind of falling into it because he is just naturally a likable guy. But I just felt like he couldn't recognize that. Look at the people on that jury. Look at who was talking. Hi, Omar. You know, these are people who are kind of like reveling in and valuing and clearly recognizing the strategic element of the game. And if you can't adjust yourself accordingly, then that is a big, big, big failure on your behalf. And you open the door really widely for someone else to come in. And even if you don't really buy everything that they're selling, you do recognize that there is kernels of truth there, as opposed to a complete binary of someone who is rejecting everything that the jury is asking for. And it's just, it's completely what Lee did. He looks at the jury, he sees myself, he sees Matt, he sees JL. You know, we were like, you know, very clearly trying to outline what we valued, not only in the game, but in the juries leading up to the final tribal, and then in the questions, and just not pivoting. Pivot! So I like that Mike did attempt. I did like that Mike attempted to pivot, but it was just like so too little too late. You need to recognize that before and just come in saying, I know I said all this, but that was to get me up to day 38. And on day 39, I'm here to tell you. Sorry, yeah, day 25. I'm here to tell you, bang, 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 bang. Do you agree with me on that statement? Statements?
Yes and no. More no. Okay. I think, well, firstly, I want to say Lee is 16 years older than Christy. I stand corrected. Lee looks great for his age. I didn't realize that Lee was 46. But anyway, I see parts of what you're saying, but it's in a different way. For me, I don't think that Mike and Lee should talk about how they played in a gamey way because it's a gamey jury. I feel like it's because they played in a gamey way. They don't see their own game. Now, because they have a gamey jury, you guys are smart enough to work out their games. So if they had like a mateship jury, maybe everyone's like, yeah, integrity. And maybe they're less burned by it or less thinking about how hypocritical or wrong that self-perception is. My issue for Mike is not that he's not pandering to the jury that he has. My main issue for Mike is that, and Lee, is that they're wrong about their games. They're wrong about themselves.
Yes.
And awareness in Survivor, yes, and self-awareness is the most critical thing. And I've said this many times. If you don't know yourself, you're lacking the context of what you're even doing. You're painting with a brush, yep, that's invisible in your hand. Like you can't see what you're doing in front of you. And for Mike, a lot of that was maybe unintentionally good, or maybe worked with things he was intentionally doing, like an innate social game that he said got him information and there's good stuff there and he could make moves and be in the numbers because of that. But my entire concern for weeks at this point has been, I'm very concerned Mike doesn't know who he is as a Survivor player. And we saw that so much in the final Tribal Council around the ways that he not apologized for, but like allowed himself to play the game. It's like, well, I am a man of my word, only not against Roxroy. That was the only thing I broke. Everything else was when people were coming for me. It's in self-protection. It's the way that, you know, I'm just kind of trying to put myself forward in the game. That's Survivor. You are describing the game of Survivor. I will be true to my word until it doesn't benefit me, until I have to protect myself. Everyone is.
Everyone does
like,
that.
Yeah, everyone's doing that. Place. Exactly. Like,
yeah.
Everyone will basically... Everyone's telling the truth until they think it doesn't benefit them. Even the people who come out lying about the profession, they think it doesn't benefit them. Okay, well, I was doing it to protect myself in the game. Like, it's a self-interested game. So you can't say, well, the game forces
so
me to
annoying.
Do that. It forces everyone to do that. So I feel like there's a lack of understanding there for Mike. And the game is lost on that. It was paining me when he came out. And I think Tori kind of leaves him there. She's like, your perception is of integrity. He's like, yeah, I agree.
Oh, such a good question.
Yeah.
Such a good question.
Yeah.
More people need to do that. Here's what I think of you. Here's what I think of you. Here's what I think of you. Go. Like, tell me why I'm wrong. Like, you're basically, she set it up on a platter. It was one of the best jury questions I have seen in a very long time. Sorry, you were saying.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Got excited.
I agree because it was a little misleading because it led Mike, if she had said like, Mike, I think that you're someone who thinks that they're someone of their word, but actually isn't. Maybe then he's like shifting on the spot, like, oh, what people think this about me? But he like immediately leans in and is like, yes, it's been, and that is definitely how he sees himself. But that's not the way that he was playing the game. He's made up these arbitrary rules about when it's okay for him and it's not okay for anyone else. Well, Hai was coming for me. Yes, but Hai is also being true to his word until he thinks, oh, I mean, I don't think Hai was coming for him, but like everyone's being true to their word until you don't fit into their plans. So they're protecting themselves in the game and now they're playing, but it's okay for you, but not for everyone else. So
yes,
I can compare him to Lee. You can compare him to Coach. You can compare him to any of these players who come in thinking that their word has more value than other people's. And if they're breaking it, they have more reason than anyone else when everyone has the same reason. And that reason is I'm playing the game of Survivor. So I definitely can bring it to that. And I think it's very, very hard to win Survivor when you don't understand yourself and you don't have self-awareness. I think that is basically the toughest hurdle that anyone will have to clear. So in the first part of your question, I do compare Mike to Lee. We'll talk about Marianne to Chrissy, which I don't see as much. But for Mike,
no.
Yeah, I definitely see that. And that archetype is, you know, Survivor and Australian Survivor in particular is like littered with the archetype of not understanding how the game intersects with your personal values and how that's really the same as what it's doing for everyone else.
But yes, you articulated it much better than I could have. But what I'm saying is I'm not saying that he should have come in and looked at the jury and said, what do they value? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll just say that arbitrarily. I never recommend saying that. Oh, what does the jury think? I'll just parrot that back at them. What I recommend is looking at what the jury values as a set of criteria that they're going to vote against. Then internalize that, find the times that you did that, and bring that to the front. And it's in that reflection that Mike lost it. He wasn't able to, he was trying to put too much of a distance between himself and the jury when he should have been kind of like bringing himself much closer to the jury. As if anyone who has been voted out of a game for $1 million that they've surely thought that they were the main character of and has gone back to Jury Villa and has sat nights after night stewing and pondering and talking is going to believe you.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I was just thinking. Who is going to believe you when you say that you have only lied once?
Yeah. But
it's never going to work.
But the core issue is that Mike believed that he'd lied once. Mike doesn't know his own game. So he's losing in a final tribal council based on why he lost in the game. He's a different player. He's a different human being. And a different player of Survivor if he understands what he's doing. He's making different, better moves that aren't telling everyone you're going to play your idol on them because you know that that's something that's going to get you caught or you know how to cover for it if that's something that you've done. He's not playing on a plane with himself where he understands that. So I think all of his worst moves in the game are around a lack of self-perception, even when Omar's puppeteering him. It's a lack of where he sits in the game and his own agency and awareness. It just manifested in the worst way in Final Tribal Council. So there's a lot of meaning in him losing here. It's not just that he couldn't articulate his game. It was that he couldn't articulate it because of the way he was playing because he couldn't see it. Because of literally how he perceived himself and how he perceived the game, which is the material of the game. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like it's inseparable from who he is as a player. It's not just talking it out. And that's why I want to pivot to Marianne, because I feel the same for Marianne. Now, to compare to Chrissy, I think Marianne had a much stronger game than Chrissy. I think Chrissy had a phenomenal
tribal
council.
I think there's very few comparisons.
In terms of the game.
She played a way better game.
She played a way better game. But because of that, Chrissy's final tribal council is so good because it is. There's a chasm between the final tribal council and her game. That's why the final tribal council itself is so good. She had the most difficult game to defend and she still did it. And applause for that. She's coming in and having to really talk up something that's not really there. She's trying to put shine on something that doesn't shine. And to me, her being able to speak to that, that's her biggest skill, but it's disparate from the game that she played. Marianne, I feel, is coming in. And again, there's extreme meaning in the way that she is dominating this final tribal council. Also, one of the moves is literally in the final tribal council. So she's still like playing the game in it, but she is using her, like in the opposite of Mike, her extreme skills, her extreme awareness. We see her come into this episode and she's like, I think I can finally win. I didn't think that before. She's right. you know, I want to sit next to Jonathan Romu. She knows, even Mike is like, I'm going to win. And Marianne didn't know. Even the way that they perceive their win chances shows where they sit with their own self-perception. So she brings that awareness to be able to perfectly articulate it, but it's not disparate from her game. She is just building on where she's been building the whole game with the same skills of awareness, game awareness, self-awareness, player awareness, juror awareness that she's had the entire game. I think that's very different from Christy, because I think hers is less separable between the game and the final tribal council performance. I think they're part and parcel of each other. Whereas I think that Christy, her game is somewhere, and her final tribal council performance, her finale performance, is chasms above it. And I think that's a very big difference for me.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
There's a lot in this, in comparing them. This was the most interesting thing for me, because I think that a lot of the commentary has been like, well, Marianne just won it on Final Tribal Council, but I really think the meaning is Mike losing it on Final Tribal Council, as good as her performance was, like Mike losing it on Final Tribal Council is based on who he is as a player long term, and her winning it is the same way for me.
I think though that a lot of the jury, like for them, that like they like same as what I wanted from Lee. Like, I want you to come in here and tell me that it was all purposeful, that you were playing the game, that you did, and it's like, but part of me knew that that wasn't going to happen. I was hoping, which is why I went into Final Tribal Council wanting to vote for Lee, but still being undecided.
Yeah. And so you'd put your hand up, had JLP asked the same question, you'd be like, I was leaning towards Lee, but you also didn't have faith that Lee would do that, which is maybe true of the jurors who were saying they were really kind of leaning towards Mike. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And that's why I think that there's a lot of parallel between myself and the jurors this season, is because it was like, I'm hoping that you're going to do this, because I want to do it. But if you don't do it well enough, I've got a really, really, really good option sitting there based on what I'm hearing right now. So, like, you're losing it with every time you open your mouth.
Yeah.
And that's tough. That's a tough thing. That's something that Lee grappled with for many years, and that's something that Mike will grapple with for many, many years. Mm. But it's not enough to say – it's not to say that – Mike lost and that's why she won. Like, Marianne was a great player with some really cool content and a really good story. And like, people want to feel good about who they vote for. Give them a story they can believe in. And she had it. Yeah. Not only did she sell it, she actually had the story. So
yeah.
Great.
A lot of the jurors said in Jury Speaks, they wanted to vote for Marianne because they liked her, but they just needed her to like make them feel good about it from a strategic perspective. And she did. So I think when you're coming in with this and it's someone like Lee or Mike, it's not as, I want to say minimal, but like, speaking of Final Tribal Council, it's definitely a big part of the game, but it's a more, it's definitely a more like individual part of the game that just exists like in this one format. And it's a smaller part of the game, I think, than like game awareness, self-awareness, which is like part of every single phase of the game. So it's not like, well, how well can you speak to your game? How well can you defend it? Oh, if you're not a good public speaker, I'm not going to give it to you. It's not that. It's like literally Mike and Lee. No. You are either the person I think you are, which is not someone I'm going to vote for, or you've been a different person this whole time. And it's not just you speaking to it. It's you knowing that and that actually being true, which it wasn't for Mike and Lee. Like, they think they're playing a different game. They think they're playing the honorable game. If you weren't doing that, you're a literal different player to what I thought, and like, claps for you. It'd probably be the equivalent of someone coming in, like Chrissy coming in and saying, I was a super fan the whole time. But that's not true. So if you're going to come in and do what I want you to do, which is to have been different to what I thought and to know that you were playing the strategy game and to be actively have been playing the strategy game and actively using your word and honor and integrity as a disguise, you're a different player than what I thought, and that's impressive. And if you can talk about it, I will vote for it. But if you're someone who was literally thinking that you played with honor and integrity as you backstabbed everyone and didn't even see your own hypocrisy, yeah, I'm not going to vote for that. So it doesn't matter how well you speak about it. It's not about speaking. It's not about public speaking. It's about, who are you? Who do you think you are? And are you who you think you are? Is your worldview the same as what it is? And if it's not, it's not going to get votes. So that was paining me with Mike, because I just knew. I was like, they are not going to like this.
Yeah, and you know what you need? You need, like, and this is what I was afraid of in season one. I was, not afraid. This is what I was, like, thinking could have been a possibility, is the one person who is in that person's camp just standing up at the beginning of Tribal Council and being like, Lee, tell them that it was all part of your plan.
We talked about your plan. Yeah, exactly.
Wink. Remember that plan that you and I used to speak about how you're really strategic and, like, you value the game?
Yeah.
I think we need to hear that tonight, wink, wink. Like, Jonathan needed to, because Jonathan would have heard, even in that one night, trust me, that's all you talk about, that he would have heard them say, like, oh, yeah, we need Mike to own it, need Mike to own it. Instead, Jonathan joined the chorus.
Yeah, and people voted for him.
Which was, yeah, I know, but, like, if you really wanted him to win, like, he needed to be like, yo, buddy, hey, just giving you the heads up, you might want to XXX. Yeah.
I feel like Jonathan came into that tribal council being like, Mike played with honor and integrity. But then once they were all yelling, he's like, yeah, on your game, Mike. And he's like, did he not play with honor and integrity? Like, he was loyal to me and I'm the person who matters. So I'm so confused about it. But once, like, we're all an angry mob, like, I will pick up the torch and pitchfork. He did still the vote pitchfork for Mike. I do think that, that was a really hard one. And it's just based on that self-perception. I will say for Mike, I loved him realizing it in the middle of Final Tribal Council. Now, it was way too late. And actually, it wasn't even like a game-winning move. Yeah, in terms of too little, like, oh, yeah, you're right, everyone. I'm a worse player than what I thought, and I didn't even know it. Like, I'm not coming in with that intentional strategy. Like, you've told me this, and I'm telling you I was wrong. Like, there's falling on your sword to the jury, but there's falling on your sword with that at that point in the game. Like, it's not going to get him the win. But that's why I loved it, because he actually didn't do it for the win. And this is what I love about Mike as a character, and I think it really speaks to him as a person. To be able to come in and say, I'm hearing that I didn't keep my word. To pivot, now that you've said pivot, I can't stop. But to pivot and to accept what the jury are saying, I honestly believe that 99% of people, when people who are in a higher position of power than you as jurors are coming in and saying you're a different person than you think you are, you're a different player than you think you are, the way we perceive you and perception is reality, especially when it's like a basically unanimous perception, the way we perceive you is different to how you perceive yourself. That is so confronting. There is some cognitive dissonance in that that I think people could take years of therapy to try to get through. And you're being told that in a way that's being told to you as you lose $1 million that he thought he had won, because again, it's that lack of awareness, but he thought he had won. Your pitch is wrong. There's no way you can pivot to it now to even win. And for him to not double down defensively, which I truly think most people in the world would be like, no, because it's a defense mechanism for yourself mentally, like beyond the game. It's like, no, they just don't know me. They're wrong. I know me and I'm right. I'm a person with integrity. My word matters.
And my family back home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you just don't know me. You're just wrong. My family back
home wouldn't say this.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, I don't even blame people who would do that, because that sounds so confronting to do it in a way that you're losing $1 million, let alone how you see yourself. So as a human moment, to have the humility to hear them, to be open to it, and to say, okay, my game was different than what I thought, not to win the game, but as a person, I'm saying this. That was one of my favorite moments of the episode, because I thought, wow, what a character. Like, what a character Mike has to be able to look at himself. Like, what humility. I literally thought, Mike must be an amazing partner to his now wife. Because Peter's like, Peter is so not stubborn. If we're having an argument, like, he'll change him. If I, like, make a good point, which I often do, he'll say, like,
no.
He'll, like, change his argument in the middle. He'll be like, okay, I agree with you. And I'll get mad at him. I'll be like, wait, what? You just thought this. Now you thought that. He's like, you've changed my mind, and I agree with you. Like, he comes around so fast. I'm a stubborn person, so I don't get it. I'm like, why aren't you just, like, clinging to this now?
Yes, and I'll relate to that. Christine and I just, like, keep smashing our heads against each other.
Yeah, and literally Peter teaches me to be, hopefully, a little bit of a less stubborn person, because I'm like, I will cling to my point till I die, rather than come around. And it's a major character flaw, obviously, to be stubborn. Like,
this is you with the final four fire.
No, the final four, because I'm right about it. The problem is that I'm right, so it's hard to let go of it. Peter's often wrong, and he sees it. No, sorry. I genuinely think it's an incredible personality quality. And I genuinely thought for Mike, like, if he can change it around, it means that if he's arguing with his partner and his partner says something, like, he will hear them. That's what my mom always says. I don't know why I'm getting into the relationship, but my mom always says that about Peter. She's like, you have someone, not that Peter does a lot, I don't know, making Peter sound like he's wrong. He's not. But Peter, even if he's, like, remotely in the wrong, will immediately turn it around. Like, that's how I feel with Mike. He's like, to do it in that moment, I genuinely thought was incredible. Like, I think it's an incredible quality that both Mike and my husband have. I don't know why I brought it to Peter, but I just genuinely think, as a stubborn person, I would just never do that. I think it's amazing. I really do.
So we need Peter to convince you about the final four family. Okay.
No, because I convinced Peter. That's the problem. That's the problem in this house. Peter's like, I agree.
I don't know why I keep going back to it. I don't even like it either. I just want you to, because I like being contrarian. I want you to eventually like.
No.
Can we talk a little bit about Marianne and the way she answered some of the questions?
Yes, definitely. That's where I thought that
her.
Great mind.
I, I thought that her first few questions weren't actually that good.
In terms
I was like, ooh, I thought, I was like, you are leaving stuff out. Like you are, and again, editing could have cut it out. It could have gone much longer. But I was like, oh, there's more that you could talk about. You're not selling yourself. Like talk about that great stuff about how like you, you know, weaponized the fact, like the way that you considered your emotions and talk about just like the way that you, you know, you were much more aware about the dynamics of the tribe. But I definitely think that like fairly quickly, like a couple of questions in, she started really hitting her stride.
Mm.
And the other thing that I wanted to say about Marianne is that, do you know when you, do you know, like, and let's keep this metaphor going, like you're having an argument or a conversation with Peter or whatever, when you start to feel like you're right and the ball starts rolling.
From the very beginning of the argument, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm a horrible partner, start, like on the other side, like, don't be married to me, yeah.
No, when you start getting some traction and your points start coming clear and you, like you, there's a confidence that builds with that, that makes you feel like you're on a bit of a roll. And the opposite happens when you feel like you're not. And I could just, I felt like I could see Marianne sitting taller from the second half and I could see Mike slouching lower. And it was the same thing that I was watching with Christy and Lee, that like she was starting to kind of like get some momentum and that momentum came at the cost of him not getting momentum and him starting to sink it. And I just loved the way that Marianne, and if you go back and watch it, after she was asked her question, she would go like, and like smile kind of thing. And like do this, like, mm-hmm. I've made a really good point. And it was the cutest, most endearing, just like summation of how proud she was of her game and that it didn't feel fake. Like mm-hmm. it felt like she was reveling in being able to articulate herself and to finally explain why she played the way she did. And it was charming and it was sincere and it was, it hit all the right notes. And I think that Mike perhaps could see that and is what kind of was sending his answers to be even worse.
Yeah. I mean, I've long said that the Final Tribal Council faced different juries based on, you know, the way that the juries receive them. And it becomes hard because if you're coming in with more to gain, like more that you need to gain, you're on the back foot. You have a harder jury to pitch it to versus like mm-hmm. if you come in and you're already leading, so you need to gain less, you're in a better spot. I talked about that a lot with, Smash and Nicole, George and Haley, where it kind of widens that gap. I think for Mike and Marianne, that's definitely true of Romeo. Like they came in, like Romeo had a very hard jury from the beginning. Mike and Marianne came in similar spots because the jury was undecided. But then as it started shifting, I think Marianne was like the benefactor of that. I think that she did something very well that we often talk about in Final Tribal Council, which is you don't want to overstate or understate yourself. Even when I feel that that was infuriating to me, the viewer, in when Jonathan is pushing back on the Oma move. So Marianne says that like her big move is bringing in Romeo for the Oma move. Last week, we spoke about how that was the biggest part of this, that Romeo doesn't know he's getting votes. He doesn't know that he could be on the 3-2-2. He doesn't even know about the amulet. He doesn't know his power to take out Jonathan. And maybe that's something he should do. Maybe he wants to work with Oma instead of Marianne. She's bringing him in socially. She's giving him just the right information. It saves Jonathan. Jonathan doesn't even know that he was the one helped and saved by Marianne's incredible work in the very specific detail. She doesn't say the whole Oma move, although she could have, but she gives a very specific detail of bringing in Romeo, which 100% she does, which is key to the move because it means that they can split the vote. It means that Romeo isn't going to turn around and vote out Jonathan. Like, Jonathan's the one at risk, and he doesn't even realize Marianne's important work in that move, the whole move, but especially to save him. And he's still saying, well, Mike and I came up with Oma. That's the least important part of the move. Okay, you identified that the biggest threat was the biggest threat, as everyone did, as Marianne did. But she still doesn't push back that much on it, even though it's not a jury vote she's going to get, because she knows that, you know, some jurors hate that. That they think it's their thing, and they don't want to hear, even if they're wrong, that this was yours and not theirs. And Jonathan's totally wrong about that. Like, this was completely Marianne's move. Okay, you worked out like that Oma needs to go and we're doing some stuff with another fire, but she like really took it, ran with it, and saved you with specifically citing the Romeo connection and the way she was bringing Romeo into that, so that the 3-2-2 could happen in the way it did, and that he didn't get 3-2-2'd out the other way. So that was really irritating to me. But then later, she says her big move is like the individual positioning of the final four, that everyone is going to take her through, which again, I've debunked a little bit from the exits, but I think it's fine for her to get more out of that, even though I don't fully agree with it, because she should be getting so much more out of the Oma move, but she can't really push it that much because people will then start incorrectly trying to take it from her. Michael say that was me, Jonathan saying that's him. They're both wrong, but it's like, all right, let me talk about this other individual thing I'm doing that no one can kind of take from me as much, because she really should, she should be given the Oma move more fully, but she's not. So it's like, all right, you take the final four positioning, and she makes that like her crowning move.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it was good. Like you just don't want to threaten. I feel like Jonathan has a fairly fragile sense of like what he was doing in the game. I think he has a very high opinion of what he was doing in the game, and you don't want to threaten that, because I do think that his ego is perhaps a bit more fragile than it actually is, than it seems. So I think that she made the right call there not to push back on him.
Even though she's not getting that vote, you don't really want to get into the back and forth. Like, just you let that one go to the keeper.
No.
Like, all right, like, you know, I was going to do it, but like, I definitely credit you in that. Like, at the point where you're kind of arguing with Jonathan, even if you're right about what this move was, like, that's just not a great look. She gives the credit she needs to individual jurors. She talks with, like, extreme specification about the moves that she was making. And I don't think that she understates or overstates herself. She cops some things about like some of her early social game. I think all of that is great. People want to see the humility. They want to see that you see yourself in a great way. Marianne can't come in and say, I was pulling the strings the whole time, because it's not true. And she doesn't believe it to be true. So she talks with great awareness about her flaws and her gains and her intentional perception, all of the intentionality that she had behind that, in a way that's very, very nuanced and not just like, I was the best, and jurors love that. But we haven't even spoken about the idol being revealed. Because I feel like the theater of that, like, you could see minds being changed in the moment. Like, that was so good.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I wish I had more to offer, but I have no notes.
Perfect.
I think it's, yeah, it was great.
Yeah, she lessens Mike's agency so much in that. Like, the fact that he's sitting next to her and he was her biggest competition, he now looks like a fool that he didn't know about it. She was someone who was seen as someone who couldn't keep her mouth shut or whatever. She was keeping the only secret in the game. And it's a blind side of the jurors at Final Tribal Council. It's literally an effective idol play at Final Tribal Council. Because I said on Twitter, an idol has not negated a vote in US Survivor in now over two calendar years since Winners at War, which was over 2 years ago. And it continues not to, because it didn't hear. But to me, this is like an effective idol play, but in a different way.
I think the only risky, like if I had to add, if I'm nitpicking now, to say it's the only secret in the game is in itself a very risky proposition, because there could very well have been secrets that you didn't know about that never played out, because in their by virtue of them being secrets. But
it's only secret. It's like everyone has a secret, but you just don't know it because they're secrets. Yes. That's the point of a secret.
Yeah. Because like if someone did have a secret that they actually did keep and they, like, you know, she wasn't aware of it, then they would be sitting on the jury going, mm-hmm. But again, if I'm picking on that, I'm nitpicking.
But in saying that, the theme of the modern era is that like nothing can be kept a secret because there are the phrases, and that's why like knowledge is power was told, so that's why it didn't work. And like, I think for 41 as well, the theme became like no one, and you see it on Twitter, no one keeps any secrets anymore. So like, it would be unfortunate if she was just wrong about that, but I think it kind of works against the theme of like, we've all been so open, we've all had to be so open in this season, but actually like I had this also secret thing. Which I guess the nullifier was as well, but she maybe didn't know about that because it was a secret. I don't know. But yeah, I think it still worked really well because it was definitely like the biggest reveal that I can think of. Like, because everything, like, it's not like Drea got to reveal knowledge is power because she already told Oma, he told everyone else. Like, she got to have the reveal. Like, that's the only tribal council reveal we've had.
The tribal council reveal. Yes. Can we talk about Romeo really quickly?
Well, how do you know that where I want to go in my notes? Are you reading my notes? I wanted to talk about Romeo.
I can tell when you've come to a natural.
Like, I love it.
We've been doing this for too long.
No. It's the natural back and forth where, like, you're my mentor, you pass the torch to me, but you're still like, moving on, Chan, to the next thing. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm getting there. And like, I'm running this podcast, like the endless argument about who's actually running the podcast. Romeo, tough spot for Romeo.
Romeo.
I felt for Romeo so much.
I literally wrote that. My note is, I felt for Romeo so much.
Really?
you literally just read my note.
No, have we swapped notes? Like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Okay,
well, mine is definitely not the length of yours. Mine's just written on a note in my phone.
Oh, yours is 3,851 words.
I don't think so, no. But I really felt so much for him just when he said that, like, he was given this game, like, this game he was dealt that he didn't want to play. And, God, I feel that. I know that. I know that feeling. And it's a frustrating feeling. And, you know, why should he be discounted because of the, like, why should he be totally discounted because of the perception around, you know, who he is? It's like, it's not who he is in. Intending to be in the game, it just kind of like that just evolved through these set of circumstances, and maybe it was a different season that wouldn't happen. And that's the beauty of playing twice, because, you know, maybe, you know, going into playing a second time, I was like, did those things happen because that's just me as a survivor player, or did those happen because I am the one that causes them? And it was really, it was great. It was great to play a second time and know, okay, that was just those specific set of circumstances. So I really wish that's why I wish everyone got a chance to play a second time to kind of work through some of that stuff.
But what if the second time the same thing happens and then you definitely know it's you, and then that traumatizes you?
Well, no. Well, then you definitely know it's you, and then you can kind of work on that.
That sucks. And, you know, no one wants that. Yeah. No one wants to work on themselves.
No one wants self-improvement.
Except Mike. Mike's amazing.
They just want to be proven right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except Mike and Peter, these two monsters.
Yeah. No, if you were all stars and the same thing happened, you wouldn't be like, oh, I'm so grateful for this new self-knowledge. You would have been like, oh, this sucks so hard.
No, I felt for him, and I just thought that it was really good that he had this, like, really good realization about, like, what he could take from the game. Because when you know that the winning is not the is going to happen, you then kind of like say, oh, well, hold on, what else did I actually get from this experience? And it sounds trite, but, like, everyone does have that realization at some point, whether it's while they're playing, after they're playing, or years later. I felt for him, and I really, like, I'm really hope that he watched the finale surrounded by his family and friends, and he really got to kind of, like, live in the moment and take that, the fact that he won the challenge, the fact that he had this big realization, and the fact that he did some really good stuff out there just in the early part of the game. So I felt for him, and I thought, and I hope he's feeling good.
Yeah, he was taking other stuff out of the game even during it, and it's, again, that self-awareness. I felt that, I specifically felt for him in the interaction with High, which, I mean, his relationship with High is so intriguing. Like, he later, like, thanks him for helping him come out and, like, you know, really, like, be free within himself. But then they've had this back and forth the whole time. And High has the power as a juror to win the spat, basically, because Romeo's trying to get something out of him. Like, High's not trying to get anything out of Romeo. So with High having all the power, like, he can get his pound of flesh for the wrongs of the game, and says that Romeo was gaslighting him, which I think, like, he's not right about. Like, that's Survivor. He was lying. It was, like, a long-term lie. We have to be able to lie in Survivor. Like, I don't think that is gaslighting in the way that we see gaslighting. It's, like, a real-world term, because the rules of Survivor, again, are different from life. Yeah, like, if you go and, like, lie to someone repeatedly in life, that's strange. But, like, we're in Survivor, it's different, and it was fine for Romeo to do that. It wasn't a great move, but it's his prerogative. But then, because High wins the argument, not for being right, but because he's the juror with the power, like, the way that Romeo was, like, falling over himself to apologize and say that he had been emotional and just, like, really praise High as this great player who would replace him with Drea, it was hard to watch, because, you know, he's never going to get that vote, and he's, like, falling over himself, and I thought was just a genuine way, and it was difficult to watch. I was thinking, so, story time. April Fool's this year. This is a long way around. April Fool's this year. Nick messages me, and he's like, I'm going to, I just got called to be on Survivor, and I don't know the date. I'm like, I was, like, really, like, dealing with finale week of Australian Survivor, so I was like, oh cool. Like, what is it? And you gave this whole thing of the theme that we were going to go on with Rivals, and I'm, like, eating it up, and you said you were going to go on, can I say with who? Yes. Because you wear it on with Mo Hope, and I'm like, well, you clearly can't do that. That would be really messed up. I'm just, like, giving you advice, and then you're like, April Fools. I'm like, oh. Well, I was like, well, it's not my fault, because I genuinely think that Australian Survivor would call you and ask you to go on a rival season with Mo Hope, because it's a messed up show. All the way around to say, I feel like if that were a real theme, High and Romeo would be, like, perfect for this theme, because their dynamic is intriguing to me. But I just wanted to tell the story of when I got, like, completely owned on April Fool's, and I'm still working on my
I forgot. I forgot about that. And do you know what? I was just feeling so petty that day. I just remember sitting around being like, who can I fuck with?
People hate you for that. People aren't enjoying that. I was like, oh.
So good.
Oh, I feel bad now. I feel bad about myself. I don't like that. Anyway, if that was a real theme, Hi and Romeo should be in that theme.
Yes, yes.
But I felt sad about that. I feel like Romeo, again, it's a tough tribal council for him. The jurors are, like, laughing at the stuff he was saying about, like, you know, doing it all in his underwear and how hard it was on national TV, and I thought that was good. But I thought maybe we didn't see it, but he could have maybe spoken more about his pre-merge game, because his pre-merge game was so good. It was honestly one of the better pre-merge games, but then it's so hard because everyone hasn't seen it, and then it's also like, well, that was so long ago, and then how did you fall so far? Like, Marianne built, you had the opposite. You were, like, going down a slide of your game. That's not great either, but, like, all the great stuff that he can speak to is how well he, like, ran Ika in the pre-merge, and he, like, really did well with that.
The only problem, though, is that, like, if you've got a strained relationship since with five or six people that you were there with, and you're going to be like, I was so good at the beginning, not only opening the door to people saying, well, what the hell happened to you? You're also opening the door to people saying, well, hold on, we were there, and we can tell you that that's not true. So, and everyone will believe them because what they've seen of you is the post-merge game, and they're not going to, that it's almost like you're, yeah, well, you should have seen, I was really, really good. And like, they're going to, so like, I get perhaps why I wouldn't do that with Rox and Drea there and Tori.
Yeah, it's hard because so what he was doing on Ika was so impressive. And he talked about in exits about how he knew that even if they got decimated, he and Dre would be the last two left. And I spoke so much in the pre-merge about what I'm now calling the decimation strategy, which is that, like, if you're going to get to Malcolm and Denise or Ricard and Shan levels of decimation, that you will be the final two. It's a really, really hard strategy because if you're two of six and you're clearly at the top, then you should be the ones that are toppled. But if you have that much control that it's going to, like, internally get cut away so that you're the final two, that is so impressive. And that's what Romeo was, like, doing actively. Even Marianne talked about how she kind of erroneously thought maybe that she would kind of survive the decimation strategy. I do think that the decimation strategy is going to be a big, big part of the new era of Survivor and the way the future cast play. It was a big part of last season, the way we saw, like, Shan and Ricard do it. Evie was doing it. I felt like, you know, that's how maybe Danny and Deshaun would have been looking at Luvu if they'd gone to Tribal Council. I think it's a big, big part. That's so impressive. That's the most impressive thing he did in the game by far. But then to go from that to where he went to, everyone would just say, like, well, it's not about how you start, it's how you finish. And that's just such a far fall. But without being able to talk about that, the only things he has to credit are, like, the fake idol, which people did not like. The jury didn't like it. No one believed it. They all talked about how they didn't believe it. Even Romeo and Exits was like, no, they did believe it. Then they were being cross-checked in the same Exits that were like, no, we didn't believe it. Jury didn't like it. He's talking about the fake idol. He's talking about scraping through. And he really just has the final challenge when, like, there's just not enough there. So he's caught between talking about his best, actually really impressive moves, a much better pre-merge than, like, Marianne had, that she even had the potential to have, just going to, like, that one Mariah tribal council that was a bit more rote, although she did, you know, win out socially there. But it was a great pre-merge. It's just that, like, to talk about it where it fell so far, I just think that's a really, really difficult one to talk about. It just left him with very little else once he couldn't really have that as, like, the focus of what had been the best parts of his game.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I feel sorry.
Yeah. I think it's really tough. I think as well, when they ask him, like, why did you take Marianne? There's not a lot there. He's like, she had no strategy, or we had, like, a similar game. But then he doesn't talk about how he had a more dominant first half. But then he kind of gives it up. He's like, eh, it's kind of in your hands now. And that, to me, like, really cemented that I feel like he did it emotionally. He's like, I did what I did and you guys decide. Because he knows that it's beyond game for him and that he just, like, wants Marianne to win. And I feel like that was, like, a pretty clear indication of that.
Yeah.
Did you think about Romeo as a character more broadly, just as we start, like, kind of eulogizing and looking at this final three?
I thought it was great. I really liked his character type. I thought his profession was interesting. It was a more fleshed out version than what we had with Chet, because they had the same job, right?
Yeah.
Pageant coach. Yeah.
I don't like Chet anymore. Anyway, Chet has bad takes. That's what's happening on the Survivor internet at the moment.
Oh, really? Is he just like an
engineer? Chet resurfaced with bad takes, just about, like, the diversity initiative. Anyway, it's not important. The point is, like, Chet's cancelled, basically.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
But I like that we got to see a little bit more about a character who has that interesting profession. I thought he had a great personal story, and I like the you know, it's always good to see. It was always funny to see him standing next to Jonathan, too big. It's like George and Lenny from of Mice and Men, just this tiny, sneaky person and this big kind of like lumbering oaf. So kind of, I thought that was always funny. But I really liked him. I think he got, I think that he will be upset with how his game played out in the short term, but hopefully he will take more from it in the long term.
Yeah. I mean, just the last thing on this final tribal council, the personal journeys, I think ending it on that was great. It was great for the theme of the season, which has been so much on story and the way we're invested in all of these characters' stories. I think that, you know, Marianne talks about it strategically as well. I mean, it's the reason she made some of the moves, but really just the fact that they all had something to represent that was all important, even if they weren't all going to be winning games, that was a really nice way to end that final tribal council.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Where am I going next, Nick? You tell me.
Now you're going to rank Marianne as a
Stop
winner.
Stop it! And don't do that. Yeah. Don't do it. Fine. Yes, I'm going to talk about Marianne as a winner. Marianne as a winner. What do you think of Marianne as a winner? Just occurred to me.
I don't think it was one of the most impressive games. I really don't. I think that she's one of the most impressive characters.
Character,
for sure.
Yeah,
like
character
she
winners.
Might. Mm. Character winners, like give me the other big character winners.
Tony.
Who we got?
Tony.
Yeah, other than Tony, who else we got?
Tony again, when Tony won the second time.
Sandra.
Sandra.
Pearl Islands.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my thesis is that she is one of the top five character winners of all time. Strategically, she's in the bottom half because I think she did good stuff, but I think a lot of players do good stuff because you don't win without doing good stuff. But I think that if we, and I'm going to pull up a list now because I don't want to miss anyone. And I genuinely think that she is one of the most fascinating characters we've had maybe ever. Like I'm looking at this list and character wise, Cochrane.
David is a good one. Tom Schwartz would definitely be a character winner. Mm-hmm. In a different way.
Well, I'm talking about US. Well, yeah, Richard Hatch. Mm. Richard Hatch. We're looking at someone like Todd. I think was a super fascinating character. Even Bob has himself as a character, like a very unique character. Cochrane for sure. Natalie.
Yeah.
But I would say that she's in the top five next to Tony, next to Sandra. Next to Richard.
I think she's third.
Richard, Cochrane, Sandra, Tony, and then Marianne fifth.
Marianne fifth? I mean, look, she's one of my favorite characters ever, just in terms of, the whole journey. I feel like she had it all in terms of, like, that strategy did come into play. She's such a great character. She was emotional. She was inspiring from the first episode. I've talked about this in the Double Tribal Council as well. She's also so funny. Like, I think on the rewatch, we're just going to look back at the fact that she could win, and she had me laughing all the time. A confessional where she's like, I've seen every episode other than six episodes of Token Teens. So funny. When Jackson left and I cut to her and she was sobbing. Hilarious. It cut to a confessional once of her, and she was just talking normally, and you could hear her in the confessional, and then it cut to her face, and she was sobbing. That made me laugh so hard. Like, she's an incredible character. As a player, I think she's a stronger player than maybe she's being given credit for. Like, she will, I don't want to spoil the Chizzy, but assuming she gets a lot of points this week, like, she's going to come second in the Chizzy. Oma did win handily, but she will come second. Let's talk through her game. So the worst thing is she's shown as, like, lower on the pecking order of Taku, and maybe she was. But I still think, like, who decides that hierarchy? Like, Lindsay has said in Exit that she was closer with Marianne and Oma than Jonathan. If it's right before the merge, probably Jonathan goes. Like, all right, maybe she's a little lower or has less agency in the pre-merge, and that's, like, the worst part of her game. All right, that's where we get to. And then she gets to the merge, and she's not in the numbers, but she's vital to Taku at the point where, like, they're asking for a sacrifice and Jonathan doesn't want to even give her. So, like, while she's not in the majority, she is with Taku, and Oma has talked about the way that Taku had that, like, really intentional driving force strategy but under the radar. So she's in with that group. Definitely helps her, like, the double tribal council where Taku have the majority. And while, like, she's not in the numbers of that, it's hard to say she's really on the bottom when she's in that driving force. And then to have to constantly work at your positioning, because it's not just like you get to the merge and you're in the group, which has merit, but that, like, that saves you for a few rounds. She's in the bottom. She's never targeted. I was saying this whole time, it was insane that Chanel, even Romeo, Tori were all getting targeted before her when she had the idol, when she had possibly had the chance for an extra vote, and she did have the extra vote. She was way more threatening with this Taku 4 as well that were all still there, and she was never looked at. She was the last one on the bottom who was ever going to be looked at, which meant she was never going to go because this majority were never going to ride it out to the end. So, like, again, with the implicit immunity of the rice, like, the constant individual moves of positioning every episode to say what I think was in a good spot, I thought the whole time was very impressive. That leads her to being able to do the final six move, which I truly believe is all time, a very savvy final five move as paired with the idol reveal, which was, I also think, all time. Those are my two favorite moves from her. And getting pulled through by Romeo at four because of the social connection, that's all very, very strong. So it starts kind of like in this place that's slowly building and then ramps up so hard. I think it's a solid and good game.
Yeah, I think it's a very solid game. I think it's definitely a very solid game. But who, I think that, yeah, I think...
Yeah, there's a lot of good winners, but I would have to look at my winner rankings, but I feel like probably around the middle for me, which is very good.
I would say, I'm just looking back through my list, I would say that she wasn't better than Wendell.
Well, we're going to go look at every person now.
I'm just looking at Sarah.
Well, but there's a lot of people like Wendell, you're talking to Sarah, like those people dominated the whole time, and that's one type of game. I think if you're going to play like a more under the radar game, like Marianne can't come in with the kind of person she is and like lead an alliance to the end. Like she played the best game that she can play as like coming in as a younger woman.
Definitely, yeah, definitely.
And it's something we spoke about with like Lisa Stanger, for example. Like Lisa's not going to come in and be like directing everyone, but she'll be socially in with people, she'll have the numbers, and then she'll have like an amazing move at the end made with extreme incredible strategy that she did at the final six. That's a good comparison, and that's like the best way possibly that she can play in her archetype, which is a difficult archetype as the mum archetype, and it's a difficult archetype for Marianne coming in as the younger girl, and I don't know how she can play that much better other than maybe just being in more socially with people, parts of the pre-merge and through parts of the merge. But I still think that she's, a lot of that is like that directed intentional perception, and she's still doing pretty well with it.
All right. I just did like a very rough, like look through the big list of winners and just went bang, 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 bang. And I just like at that, without putting too much thought into it, it kind of does check out to where I thought and where you thought. I had her as like 26.
That was so impressive that you did that so quickly.
Well, I, again, take that with a grain of salt because it was very, very like quick. But like just looking through, I'm like, okay, I thought better or worse, better, worse, better, worse, 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 better, 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 better. And yeah, and that kind of like that's pretty good. Like that's pretty good to me. That's like I'd be happy enough just to win, let alone to be like right in the middle of the pack of like Survivor winners, especially in the 26-day game, and to be in considered the top five characters of all time to win. That's amazing. So congratulations, Marianne. I'm very, very happy that you won. I'm very impressed. And it just seems that there are a lot of votes going the right way in Australia at the moment. So very, very happy.
Yeah, but a lot of
political joke.
Yeah.
Political joke for those.
We had an election this week, everyone, for the Americans. What winners would you compare her to? What winning games do you see as similar?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. I'm not quite sure. I was thinking like not a Sophie, but probably not. Like maybe a Michelle, like someone perhaps kind of like undervalued, but then like does have like some impressive moves and like does have some really good social connections.
I don't think Michelle was anywhere near to the move that in Koh Rong that Marianne had at the final six or with the idol.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
I wouldn't compare that.
I had Michelle in the bottom, obviously in the bottom half, but I'm just looking through this list now. I don't know who comes to your mind. Does Erica come to mind?
So in trajectory, I have three names. I have Natalie, I have the aforementioned Lisa, and I have Erica. And that's because just in the trajectory, it's like this building structure. Like Natalie's more dominant early, other than like having the big Jeremy blindside as a bit of a miss.
Yep.
But it's that latter trajectory, especially with Natalie of those final few rounds. I have spoken about it. Natalie built and built and built to the point where similarly, when it got to the final four, it was about Keith and Missy, where Natalie should have been the prime target and she didn't even win immunity. Mm. Again, here, like Marianne gets taken through, so there's some similarities there. It's that building structure. Lisa's in the numbers, then she takes the game into her own hands with the incredible move at the final six. Obviously, Natalie has the incredible move at the final five. Leaf was building. Killer late game move, same structure. I think Erica, same trajectory. She has the same kind of underdog to powerful trajectory. I just feel the power was like less flashy and impressive, and the underdog story was more at risk for her. Like, to compare with Erica, they were possibly in the pre-merge, with what little we know, throwing a challenge to get rid of her. Taku were going out of their way not to sacrifice Marianne, even when they needed a sacrifice. So I feel like they're all charting the same path, but I might put that as like Natalie and Lisa, and then a little bit below Marianne, and then a little bit below that I'd put Erica. But still, with that, if you were to like chart it on a graph, it's like you see it build and build and build and then go way up. That's how I see it, but just like at different points on the graph for all of them of where they sit. And then I think that what some people might want to compare it to is like Danny or Chris Doherty, like these archetypes who are like all out underdogs but then like fight at the end to win out. I just don't really see that, because I don't see her as much as an underdog. In that, like, she was always in on the vote or the split. Like, I don't think that that disparity between like majority and minority could work. It could really be even talked about as much in this season, where there was this like monolith group kind of leading it. So it's not as much as like Chris and Danny like lost power at the merge, like they lost their numbers and then they like fought it out. I don't see Marianne as being in that. I just see her as like building slowly and then ramping it up in the same way as like Natalie, Lisa, and Erica having that trajectory.
Yeah. I think that, like, you know, if we look at like comparing her with Erica, like Erica didn't go to tribal council before in the pre-merge, right? Mm. Fact check that. Yeah.
So Marianne like goes to
she
one.
Had.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like I do feel like Marianne perhaps, you know, had, I guess it was only one. Yeah.
But,
no, you're
but
right.
She wins on that one. That's the thing. It's like we don't know with Erica. Yeah. We just never got the clarity around that pre-merge. But again, like at the merge, even they're like throwing Erica under the bus. And I know that there's stuff in that with the hourglass, and they kind of was like a great app for them once they had to send her over Nasir. But like they really are Taku going out of their way to try and help Marianne and save Marianne, especially Lindsay and Omar. Even Jonathan, when he's in those conversations, is like, well, I don't really want to say it, but I guess if we have to say someone, it's Marianne. The way that Luvu treated Erica versus how Taku treated Marianne, for me, that to me is why, like, one of the reasons that Marianne gets pitched higher on that graph than Erica. And I also think, like, not a lot of players get a move like Marianne got at the final six. It was exceptional. It really was exceptional to pull off a 3-2-2. It was in the leagues for me of Natalie at the final five, Lisa at the final six, Cerise 3-2-1. It was numerical. It was cool. It was working with Romeo in that. It was having all of the power when everyone else was at risk. It was so cool. A lot of winners don't have a move that good. So that, for me, shoots her up more than a lot of winners, who maybe some of them are dominant, maybe some of them are kind of middling, but a lot of them don't have that one individual move for me that already that like elevates her in the rankings for me.
And what's interesting, I saw that Erica and Marianne have the highest percentage of jury votes of any woman to win Survivor, 87%. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Like that's a nice little stat for them.
Yeah, the way that that has worked into the new era where people are like very conscious of the patterns we perpetuate, that's been a really big thing. And we, you know, Hai's wearing a feminist shirt and Drea says like she wants a woman to win. I think that was a big part with Erica, that it was like we can't have like another male winner in a row. Not that that's like why Erica won, but it was definitely playing on people's minds. We saw Ricard and Shan talk about kind of how gender would affect it for good or bad against women, as it always has been, or will that kind of swing backwards? I think that was a big part of the, you know, with Erica's game and what she would represent and how important that is. For Marianne, that representation is so important, but I think that the jury are so gamey and such strategists that they even said like they wanted to vote for her and everything she represented and liking her and all of that, but she then had to sell it. And I do think that there's a world in which she doesn't do that, where even Hai in his feminist shirt and Drea are not voting for her by their own admission. So it's interesting the way that it definitely works in, but I think, you know, for Erica and for Marianne, maybe at different levels more for Marianne, but in both cases and in all cases, yes, representation matters. Well, thinking about it, we should be thinking about it. These patterns are important. They manifest what will happen in the future. They manifest the show that we create ourselves, and the conversations we're having all manifest that. But it still has to come with these superfan casts, with the gamesmanship, and Erica does it, and I think Marianne does that even more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Agreed again.
Where am I going next? Let me know.
The chizzy.
I was going to talk a little bit about the reunion, but we spoke so much about the, you got it wrong. Yes. Just about it last season, because it was the same thing. Like where do we land on it being an after show now instead of a reunion, because no one is reuniting?
I do feel bad for the people, the pre-merge people.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah. It does make me think that like, like, because they're not sending them straight home, right? They keep them.
They did
in
41, but I don't think they did this season. I don't know where they were then. If they were in Fiji, why weren't they here? Did they have something better to do?
Why can't they just be brought out to ask them a couple of questions? I don't know. I know it's a tough thing. I just hate the fact that they don't get included.
That sucks, yeah,
that does suck. But I get what's happening. I love all the little things that the show has done to save time. Like, I love that the jury is already sitting there on the bench, like when the people walk in. Have you guys discussed it?
Yeah. Well, no. Yeah, it's, like, yeah. In 42 minutes. Yeah, they don't. They don't have the time to bring you all in. They don't have the time for anything. Any little thing. Yeah.
So I like that they are kind of like cutting things, but, you know, don't cut the people that have played. That's sad. Yeah. I want to see Zach. I want to see Zach and Mary.
I know, the bookends.
Reunite.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that for me, just not having the jurors is enough of a reason. The pre-jurors is enough of a reason not to do it like this. In a non-COVID world, where they can be sure.
But they won't.
They're doing it forever. Yeah.
It'll never go back. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's much cheaper for everyone.
And that's fine. It's cheaper. I get it. Like, I'm very grateful that I got to be part of at least one reunion, because they're never coming back for Australian Survivor. Like, it's just where the world is going. So that being said, like, I do think that they will get rid of the, like, pizza and the kind of wine and the champagne that they keep passing around. Like, I do think that's going to go. Like, don't you think? Like,
I don't know. It's so silly. I mean, a lot of the stuff, when the stuff was just fine at best for 41, coming back in the finale, it's like, oh, now they have the clue again. Like, it was just okay. It's so random that this incredible season was like an homage to a much more medium season. Like, it's so random that this is what has been happening, that it was like, had this, like, it like honored season 41, but it was so much better than season 41, which I still enjoyed, but this was just a phenomenal season. All the pomp and circumstance, it is what it is with the pizza, and I know that Rob's ranting about them eating on the show, which is very funny. And really, when I was listening to Know It Alls, and they were kind of outlining how little was spoken about, I was like, yeah, there were a lot of missed opportunities here. Like, we didn't talk about that much. We're talking broadly about, like, new era and stuff, but they can't get into the specifics of, like, Marianne's move or, like, what Omar was doing. Like, I would love a character package of what Omar was doing. And let's talk about it. You know, let's talk about some of these amazing characters and really just kind of focus on it. But it becomes much more about the game, because we don't know who's going to be the hero of the story yet in the edit and the way the audience
Perceives
it.
Like, what's it like?
Yeah.
What's it like to be out here playing Survivor? It's like, we heard it.
We were crying. We're all crying all the time. Yeah. Yeah, they're like, who cried every day? Yeah. I'm like, I cry every day. I'm not even on Survivor. Like, of course. Like, who would even think that they weren't crying? Like, so hard to be on Survivor. But yeah, I think it's harder to get into the specifics, because the specifics haven't even been created yet. Like, we've all done this. Like, there's a lot of footage. And who knows, like, what's really going to emerge. Like, there's probably some sense. But, yeah, you can't really get into it as much on, like, specific characters or moments or moves, which would be cool and fun.
They've proven that they can do it without an audience, right? Mm-hmm. So just do it without an audience back in America. And, like, the live part is what I hated about the reunion, because I always felt like, oh, we're running out of time. Like, quick, answer your question quicker so that everyone can talk. Like, mm-hmm. I hated that. So I like that it can be more kind of, like, curated and edited. But I don't know, there's got to be another way around it. Let's try one more way before we settle.
This is my biggest thing with it, and I just want to say it, and I think I said it last time. I will, the one positive actually before that from last time was, last time I was like, oh, but they didn't talk about, like, what the jury would have done, and, like, this is, like, the best opportunity to hear what the jury wanted to do, because it's, like, not tainted by watching it. And they finally did, which was a little brutal, but, like, getting that rare insight I thought was great. So I really like that.
Yeah, that's always the best bit.
And, but especially now when it's not like, oh, who would have voted for who, but it's like, oh, well, you watched the edit. Like, I would have loved, like, let's do more. Who would have voted for Omar? Like, you haven't seen that he was the mastermind as much. Like, who would have voted for Lindsay? Like, let's talk about all of it. You know,
that's,
I would
true,
really wanted to get the most out of the jury, and I think they did a lot with it. Tangential to that, and how harsh that was for Mike to kind of find out how close he might have been. Or, again, for me, it's far, because it's part of who he is as a player, but it seems close because he just needed to change, like, one thing, but one fundamental thing about him. But you understand the point. Like, he was right there. It's hard to hear that.
Yeah.
The way that this is for the losing finalists really takes me out of it. Watching Romeo and Mike's faces when he says, we're going to read the votes right now. The same way I watched Ashawn last season, he was so downtrodden, who can blame him? It's hard to watch. It's sad for me. And I really don't like the show that they don't tell them before that it's we're going to do this now. We're going to throw you into an after show. We're going to read the votes. It's way too much mentally for them. And I know it's a reality TV show and mental health isn't paramount and we're doing it for TV, but there's no reason. You've blindsided the jury. We're doing this now. The audience already knows. So what are you doing to really kind of shock these final three contestants who've let their guards down, who think this tiring game is over? Here's another twist, another blindside. I don't think that they deserve it. And I don't think that the juice is worth the squeeze. We already know that we're getting it now. Like, there's nothing exciting about that for us. And instead, you have to see Romeo and Mike's faces. I put a screenshot on Twitter. It's really, really heartbreaking. And Final Tribal Council is so hard. It's something I've been thinking a lot about since Australian Survivor, the way that, like, it's the lifeblood of the show, the jury, the Final Tribal Council. It is the iconic moments. We put them into compilations, but it's a compilation of some of people's worst moments in their lives. Like, for, on a humanity level, like, it's quite cruel to, like, chastise people into why they're going to lose $1 million because of who they are as human beings. And it's part of the show, but, like, let's take as much care on mental health that we can for that. And I just feel like if they could have prepared them before the show, just tell them, we're going to read the votes on the island, just prepare for it, just process it, just know what you're walking into. And maybe we do it the next day. Maybe they all get dressed up, they all eat their pizza off screen, and the next day, you know, we come and we do this thing when everyone's just had a moment to just pause. But, like, to put them in it and then to ask them contractually in their after show to talk about it. And, like, Xander did with Grace and Mike did it with so much grace, and I commend that. But they shouldn't be in that position where they have to do that. And I just feel like it's such an infringement on their mental health in a way that's so clear to me and so obvious for no reason, for, like, no better TV even, that it just doesn't sit right with me. And I'm really glad that they can never blindside a cast into this again, because obviously the next cast will know that that's what they're walking into. Yep. And I really hate that they did it for 41 and 42, because I think it was just, no one deserves that. It wasn't fun.
Yep. I agree with you again.
Well, on the same page today. See, this is
I wish I could
Peter
be more,
I
wish I wish I could be more, you know, controversial so that I could, you know, give you some juice, but I agree with you. That would be awful. And
no, come in and
I
be like,
never...
no, their mental health is not important. They should be.
Yeah.
No one's on the other side of this issue, surely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough one for them. Okay, you were right. So the next part after that, we will talk about the Chizzy. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. One, two, three.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, Nick. Because we've been agreeing a lot today, maybe I'll let you go first, because I don't know if we're going to have the same points. Although this was actually a pretty hard week.
Is it? To give Chizzy points?
To give three is easy.
Yeah, so three is obviously for Marianne.
Yeah.
Yeah, three for Marianne. I'm going to give two to Mike, because I just can't overlook the fact that he did do so much right in the game. He has that innate quality that I just think that is that people like him, people feel at ease with him, people trust him. He seems really genuine. So I feel like although he didn't do great in Final Tribal, I think he did really good in the fire making. I think he's just a good dude, and I want to reward him for the season. I know you probably want me to do it more on the episode, but I do think that of the people here, he did have this. He came second after all, you know. So I'm going to give two to Mike, and I'm going to give 1 point to Romeo because of what we were talking about before about how he knew he couldn't win, and the self-awareness But mainly because I do not want to give any points to Jonathan, who I think was awful. And Lindsay, I feel way better giving it to Romeo. So I think that I'm glad that Romeo got to the end. He did great in that challenge, courage under fire. And I really like that he had self-awareness. So that's my vote.
Yeah, I'll give 3 points to Marianne. I mean, not just for winning. Like, she did amazing in this episode. Final five move was great. Idol reveal, amazing. Such a good final tribal council. I think she did excellent. I'm going to give 2 points to Romeo for the self-awareness to take Marianne to win and proving everyone wrong and winning that final challenge and having that agency there to get what, for him, is a victory. To get to the end for him, to empower Marianne, he got to do it on his terms, and that was a win at that point for him. Even though, like, some of the other stuff, falling flat with the fake idol, unwinnable spot, unfortunate, but I'm giving him 2 points for that. And then for 1 point, I feel like I couldn't give it to Mike because I feel like he actively lost the game and it was a manifestation of like so many red flags with so many leaks. Then Jonathan, I feel like Jonathan had 2 challenges in fire where like that's his job, is to win these things. And that's what he's here to do. And he didn't. So I can't give it to him. So I'm going to give a default point to Lindsay, who didn't do really anything. I guess she was like tugging on Mike's heartstrings a bit. It didn't really work out, but she's trying her best. But she didn't do anything to lose this week. She did it to lose last week. So she's going to get the default point from me. So Omar won the chizzy. I have to send him a mug. Man, I really like every single time I'm like, right, let's send the mug. The charts.
Yeah, what was the final?
So Omar won 2 weeks ago. He had 32 points. Marianne just jumped up with our 6 points to 23 points. So she comes second in the chizzy, which honestly, based on like the way the game built, I honestly think feels right. Then Drea came third on 19. Mike came fourth on 16. Lindsay just moved up to 13. Romeo went up to 12. High left on 11. Jonathan left on 8. Tori left on 3. Daniel, Swathi, and Jenny on 2. And Lydia on 1. So there's some interesting stuff there. Like, I don't think that the charts look that bad. Like, Omar definitely, I think, should have won. Like, he really controlled the whole game. Marianne, I think, with a lot of those points, feels deserved. And then Drea high up there, Mike, Lindsay, like those are the names, and like kind of high and Romeo around there. Like, I think the right names are kind of in the right spots on the board.
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did well. The chizzy does it again.
I'm down with that. Yeah.
Okay. We're pretty much at the end of the podcast, and no fatalities have befallen our loved ones. I might want to call to Peter if he's okay.
Know.
Just shout if you're all right. Just let me know. We're all good, right? It's not funny. I mean, your family got COVID during the last podcast. Like, it's
based
on some serious stuff. Yeah.
Nothing bad has occurred on the tent, so I'm good. Okay. I'm good.
And assuming like, the audio exports in the podcast, like, if you're listening to this, we made it. The curse is broken, assuming we're not blaming it for our grandparents dying in the same week, which was unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a couple of weeks ago, so I don't think we can blame the curse for that. That was a lot. That's too much. That's too much for the curse. So we took a journey on this podcast, Nick. We went to Cock Goat, talked about Australian Idol, took the curse too far into sad places. I think we covered it. You tell me. You're the host. You're guiding this podcast.
Can I do one more thing?
Oh, no. Don't tempt the curse. End the podcast. Sure. Let me know. What?
So I know that we are about to get another season of Survivor, which is cool.
Mm.
And I assume that after that, because they're filmed in twos, is another all newbie season, correct? Is that right? Is that what's happening?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're getting two more. When are we getting a returning season? I love returning seasons. I love returning seasons. And I know that, and I've been very great, very interested in the palate cleanser of the kind of these new seasons, all returnees, no mixing or matching. Love that. But I do think that after this next cycle of two, that we're due for another one. We're due for another second chances.
Mm-hmm.
Can I plant my flag now and say that season 45 will be a returning season?
I mean, that. From a like titling perspective, like usually they might go with the six for like a fans versus favorites, but I think Jeff might want to do like a new era returning season. So we won't have enough from just four seasons.
I think that they will dive into a few people from before. I did, again, because I don't have much time on my hands, and while I was busy trying to juggle two screaming children and full-time job, I was like, I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back and look at from game changers, from post-game changers, who could they get? And I just kind of just wrote a few names. I reckon there's a pretty decent season shaping up already.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, these two casts have been great, and there's a lot from the late 30s that, I mean, we haven't even had since, like, David versus Goliath, other than Winners at War. So
yeah,
there's a lot.
Exactly. So I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put a gun to your head, and you can't, you know, spend too long.
One of the curse things was that I had a knife pulled on me. Maybe we don't use gun to my head.
Yeah, sorry. Give me four names from this season who you would want to see, who you think we'll see again. Who you think we'll see again, yes.
Well, Marianne, but she's the winner, and they're not bringing her back unless it's like...
Yeah, so no winners.
Well, but yeah. Marianne's the best character.
Yeah, I know, but if we're saying it's a second chance...
Yeah. Omar? Zach?
Zach!
Yeah, Zach. I'm really upset. That's my only note for the season. I'm really upset that Zach was first boot. I'm still upset about it. I want Zach to come back. I think that would be awesome. I think it would be amazing if a Survivor season would be like, hey, these people have potential. We're bringing back first boots. If any Survivor season anywhere, that would be really cool if a season ever did that. That would be really cool. So Zach, Omar, you've really put me on the spot. I have not been thinking about this. Trying to think. Drea?
I'm 100% Drea. Thinking about this.
100% Drea?
Drea. Yeah. I had Omar and Drea, yeah.
High?
I had High, yeah. I had one more.
I'm missing someone, I think, very obvious. Who else?
I had Mike.
Oh, Mike, yeah. Definitely Mike. I was trying to think about that, like, mid-merge. I, like, missed. Yeah, Mike. Definitely Mike. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that. And we're not going to go through all of them, but the previous season, who were the people that you would think, if you had to pick four people from the previous season?
Shan.
If we're saying that, Ricard, like, they would do, like, new era.
Shan, Ricard, yeah. Evie, Tiffany. Deshaun. There's so many good ones.
Tiffany. Okay. I like Tiffany.
Yeah.
What about Xander?
Xander. Sure. Definitely. They would definitely bring back Xander.
Nasir.
Maybe we do 41 versus 42. Then they can get the 41 love all out of their system. Like, really talk about it. That's what we'll do. We'll get nine from each season.
You know, even going back, like, you know, Rick Devons, Reem, like Natalie Cole, Christian, Angelina, like Dominic, you know, there's so many good people that still haven't had a go.
Yeah.
You know,
Kellen.
So
Chrissy from 35 hasn't had an all-star since.
Devin.
Good people. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely think so. I think that, like, the fact that Marianne being a winner, that, like, makes it harder for her to come back. Well, if there's an all-winner season, obviously, but, like, you know, it has to be, like, a hero season or, like, what they did with Game Changers, where it's, like, she can't go back to, like, Fans versus Favorites or Second Chances, like, all of these things, because she's now, like, on this upper tier. And that's, like, such a bad thing for the show because she's such a good character. Like, she's a clear returnee, and I actually think her winning makes it harder for her to return than had she finished in any other spot, including Primo.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I think I would take the $1 million over playing again.
Yeah. Probably true, but for us as viewers, we're very lucky to have Marianne. Yeah. I think Omar and Drea, those are the top two picks for me. Omar, Drea, High, Mike, those are the four. But Zach, I love Zach.
Okay, cool. That's all I had.
Yeah, so interesting. I'm really interested to see, like, these deep dives and to hear about it, and, like, especially with Mike's, like, self-awareness that we got, and Omar's going to talk about how my podcast impacted it. Like, what a great postseason we are primed for with Rob's deep dives. But if you want a season with returnees, look no further than July 19th. Or 18th. I think it's 18th, but that's the 19th for me. Okay, well, I've really britted this, but it's coming mid-July. Survivor South Africa, Return of the Outcast is going to be four times a week. Yeah. And we have exclusive preseason content on RHAP. From June 5, the preseason starts. Mike and I interviewed in Sequester. We did half and half, the whole cast. Very excited about it. So tune in. Make sure you're subscribed. And any ratings, reviews, so that people can be, like, elevate the feed so that people can know Survivor South Africa content is coming, exclusive content, and then Mike and I will be recapping the weeks, the episodes, Survivor South Africa Return of the Archives, like, it just got announced a couple of days ago that the date and the preseason, like, right after the finale, because Survivor never ends. It's constantly on, and that's a great thing. So, Nick, I know you have a lot going on, but I really hope that you'll be able to at least check out 4 times a week of Survivor South Africa.
Four times a week is a big call, but I will definitely be in there. Why the shift to four? Do you know?
The networks like this, you know, the networks. And it's funny because when you talk to, like for me as a podcaster, it's
I know why Australia likes this, but I didn't think that South Africa was like
South Africa works, likes but. Australia. South Africa really likes Australian Survivor. It airs there in South Africa. Oh my God. When I was in South Africa last week, I posted this, I sent it to you. I was just channel surfing so that my grandma didn't have to watch the news all day. Scroll past a random channel that was airing the All-Stars premiere. Which was crazy. The Australian Survivor All-Stars premiere. So the Australian Survivor does well in South Africa. They like Australian Survivor. So they're looking at that and they're like, that's a good thing. And as a podcaster, obviously, I'd much rather be able to break it down episode by episode and really just like spend my time with it. But if you talk to some of the casuals, I mean, it's a lot for some of them. But like even talking to like, you know, some of my family members in South Africa, they're like, okay, great. Like, I love coming home from work, putting on Survivor. I miss it, you know, for a whole week. So I'm really glad I'll come back to it every night. So it's a lot.
Four is a lot.
It's a lot. I mean, look, we were watching Lego Masters 3 times a week. And honestly, when the day stopped and there was no Lego Masters, I was like, where's my Lego Masters? So
yeah,
maybe it makes sense.
True.
If you're not covering it and you're putting work into it, which, you know, is a lot. But if you're just kind of watching it, maybe that's a fun and good thing.
Just know that, everyone, just know that the first 20 minutes before we actually recorded this podcast was Shannon and I talking about Lego Masters, and then we were like, oh, yeah, we need to talk about Survivor.
Yeah, before we talked about Australian Idol on the podcast. Let us know if you want Nick and I to do a Lego Masters podcast. I don't feel like Rob is going to be into that, so we might have to make our own platform. But I have so many thoughts. Like, when I was in South Africa, I would audio note Peter my thoughts on Lego Masters, and every single one of those audio notes was like a 20-minute podcast about what I... And I'm into the terminology of the build and aesthetics and technique and all the things. Like, I totally know everything now.
Christina and I absolutely froth over Lego Masters.
So
it's
good.
Like one of the few shows that we always make sure, like, so no one is allowed to watch ahead. It's just, and my nephews, we get around, we sit around, we watch them. Yeah, it's the best.
I'm devastated that it's over. I really am. And I'm devastated US Survivor is over. I'm glad a little bit to get some semblance of my life back before Survivor South Africa starts, but there's been a lot of good TV, which I am very grateful for. And Nick, do you have anything to plug? What else do you have going on at the moment other than fatherhood and not being cursed at this point?
Yes, I have to plug that I'm not being cursed, which is great.
There's still a couple of minutes left. Yeah,
okay, well, we should wrap this up. Hit me up on Twitter or Instagram at Nick Idanza. Order a cameo if you'd like. They're always been fun little bright sparks in my week to do cameos for people. But I am just super busy with work and living life in a way that is very, very wholesome with my two children and my wife. And I am very, very, very happy. I'm living a very happy life right now. So I'm very happy.
Don't say that to the curse. Why would you? Like, everything's great and I'm happy. Like, are you joking? Like, don't even, like,
because I'm trying to tempt the curse to get me now. They can't get me.
Anyway.
The curse can't get me now.
Yes. I want to thank everyone for listening to a whole season of Survivor Global, if you have, I hope. Thank you for the support. Follow me at Shannon Gates, where all of the content is going to be coming, Survivor South Africa. I really enjoyed covering the season. Thank you to all my guests. Such a good time. I really loved it week to week. And yeah, I'm just really grateful for anyone who's been listening to the Australian Survivor stuff. It's been a big first few months of 2022. A lot of Survivor going on, and I really just appreciate anyone who's been along with me for the journey. So thank you so much for listening. Nick, thank you so much again. This is the ending. I think the curse is broken. I think we did it.
We survived!
Don't right now. I'm going to get off the podcast. We're going to make sure that the audio exported. That to me will be the curse. I'm honestly scared. But thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, Nick, as always, for coming on to chat the finale. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And I will see you guys.
Survivor. 21 South African 12 ordinary Australians. 16 New Zealand is 1 million pounds.
Million euro.
Try to spoke.
For the adventure of a lifetime.
For the adventure of a lifetime.
share of a lifetime.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.